Blog Talk Radio.
And with me now is Aaron William Freeland.
Hello. How are you, Frank?
I am fine. Hey, what do you think of what's going on in the world today? Lots of interesting stuff happening.
There's a whole bunch of interesting stuff happening everywhere. It's a fantastic time to be alive, my friend.
If you're alive. Because apparently... because apparently, if you kill people with nasty stuff, it's okay. As long as Russia comes to the rescue.
America got played.
Actually, I like what Obama did myself. I think it's really important that politicians actually look like they're actually listening to people.
No, I get that completely. I just think it was absolutely hilarious that Putin managed to work himself in there and settle America's hash just so quickly. It was a brilliant move because, you know what, like 3 days before Putin stepped up with his offer to disarm, John Kerry was joking about it with the press.
Well, it wasn't a joke, was it, when you think about it?
Well, no, it didn't turn out to be a joke because Putin actually took it and ran with it. John Kerry was like, you know, somebody asked him, well, what can we do to stop this? And John Kerry's like, well, he could disarm. Lol. And, the U.S.
Beautiful.
State Department actually released a statement saying, yeah, no, he was actually just kidding. But it actually turned out, no, they actually went for it.
But isn't this a better way to resolve this kind of problem rather than spend billions upon billions upon billions upon billions upon billions? I could go on for another hour, and I still wouldn't reach the amount of money that's been spent on wars in the recent past that basically handcuffed the economy, that, costs jobs, I don't know how people can't see that's the problem. I mean, you spend money, you know, if you go out drinking on Friday night and spend all the money you earned all week, don't be surprised that you have six tough days in front of you.
Well, you know, here's what's really interesting. Dick Cheney's company, Halliburton, actually made $39 billion off the Iraq wars. So, you know, it's big money. And no doubt that private contractors and others would absolutely love, if America had actually gone through with airstrikes. It's more money
it's
in
true.
Pocket for them.
Oh, absolutely. No, it goes without saying. It goes into the pockets of the few. And then it comes out of the pockets of the many.
Exactly.
That's the way it works. One doesn't have to drink too much coffee to be that wound up. The thing that I find most enjoyable about that kind of stuff is how people can't see it, and it's right there. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
I just
I mean, a lot of the times it's as plain as the nose on your face, but people refuse to believe it because their chosen news outlets don't, you know, spell what they want to hear.
Well, since I have a prominent nose, it's always there for me to see, so it's hard for me not to see. So I guess that's why I am so, you know, vividly understanding of what's going on around me, because my nose casts a large shadow. I think that the most important thing about peace and war and all that kind of stuff is that people don't die when there's peace.
That's I think, an important fact that not a lot of people tend to remember.
And then there's the part where people don't end up sick for the rest of their lives, walking around with not all the limbs God gave them, you know, or the mental capacity that God gave them, or the lungs, because of, well, I don't think it's true, but some have suggested that there have been some pollutants that soldiers have been finding themselves in that end up with real bad lung problems, you know, and all the other stuff that goes on. So I think Americans, and we Canadians as well, even though we're not, you know, historically we haven't been involved that much, but, you know, it is kind of nice to stop, not the part, the adulation part for our heroes that die on our behalf. That part, I'm on board with that 1,000,000%. But it is still kind of nice to not be seeing people on the bridges saluting dead soldiers. You know what? I'm not a big fan of death, especially, you know, death that is premature. I'm not
a
big fan.
I will be the person to admit, Frank, that I while I can appreciate the spectacle, I did not enjoy actually participating in those salutes along the Highway of Heroes. I would prefer if we didn't have to do that sort of thing.
I agree. And the only way to do that is to not get involved. But now, I posted on Facebook a saying, and it's sticking with me, and it has so much merit for the people who may disagree with the direction that we're talking, and that is that evil wins when good people do nothing. In this case, go ahead.
I was going to say, this is sadly true.
So
tend to win more often when good people remain silent and do nothing.
That's historically, we've all learned that, right? We've seen it with the World War II. We've seen it, you know, in Vietnam. We've seen it, you know, in all the other wars that happened. And in this case, would it not be at least, I don't know. I suppose we'd be speaking in the wrong, we'd be on the wrong side of this issue probably. But I think it's great that Russia jumps in with the United States, and Putin gets to be a bit of a hero for 10 seconds, you know. He gets to skirt the homophobic laws that he enacts in Russia for a couple of days and gets to be a hero for a minute instead of a jerk. I mean, you know, not bad. Not bad for him, you're right. But
not a bad thing for him at all. The other thing, though, this is what I always laugh about, is the fact that he's like, oh, I'm anti-gay, blah, 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 blah. And then there's pictures of him riding horses topless and, you know, hunting topless and all this other stuff.
There you go.
That's not gay.
You work downtown? Do you work downtown? I want to get off the Putin topic.
Yep.
I want to put Putin, never mind. You work downtown. I don't even know. The name kind of turns me off. You work downtown, correct?
Yes, sir.
Do you work anywhere near the glass that's coming down from the, you know, every couple of years this happens?
No, I'm actually at Queen University, so I'm a little bit removed from that, thank goodness.
That must have been interesting downtown.
Yeah, you know what? And it's all coming off Trump Tower, funnily enough.
Is that where it's coming off, Trump Tower?
Yep.
Huh. Maybe he put the glass on like he puts his wigs on, loosely.
No, because then it would have fallen. It's on way too securely.
Oh, my goodness. And one person was hurt, but not badly, I understand.
Yeah, somebody was actually hit by fragments of the falling glass. They weren't actually hit by the actual pane itself, which is, you know, a relief.
Yeah,
if the pane had actually hit somebody, it would have killed them.
Yeah, no kidding. And the last time this happened, I think one of them hit a police car on the Gardner, somewhere around the Gardner. That was the last place this was happening. What can we do about this? You know, is this an engineering problem? You know, I'm a construction guy. I know the answer, I think. But, you know, I know the options anyway for the answer. Either poor design or somebody didn't do what the design said. It's really only one of two.
Frank, don't put frickin' glass up that high. Leave it in the windows. That's my solution.
On balcony. My solution right there.
What do you mean, framed? All the windows should be framed?
That would be preferable, but the glass that's actually falling isn't falling out of windows, it's falling out of balconies.
Oh, you mean part of the rail system, the guardrail system?
Yeah.
Really?
That's where it's coming out of.
Oh, okay. So in other words, there's like four screws holding it, and all four screws are letting go, basically.
Well, it's either that or they're just not putting the screws in. They're just, you know, slapping a little bit of caulk on it so it's weatherproof and going, hey! And that's C-A-U-L-K, not C-O-C-K, you bastards.
Well, hang on a second. I was going to say, because what good does... Never mind.
Yeah, exactly.
I know it's sticky and gooey, but I don't think it's that sticky and gooey.
Oh, it's on fire tonight, Frank.
Or I'm going to be put out tonight.
Well, I was going to say, by on fire, I mean going straight to hell.
Hey, listen, none of this will get you going to hell. That's for people who are on the way to hell. There's nothing better than a pompous ass telling us not to do stuff after he goes to church and then rips off the public. It doesn't really matter. It's stuff that can be understood, I guess. So the glass issue, that one scares me because, you know, again, that slides right into the comment that I said that it really is sad to watch, somebody get hurt or be killed way ahead of their time because of stupidity.
That's death from above, and that's unseen death from above.
That's just terrible, terrible. Well, thank goodness nobody's been hurt. Hopefully they've figured out either whether the flaw is in the design or in the way it was constructed. Hopefully they'll find that out. It's a real sad day when that kind of stuff happens. Stuff coming from that high. Wow. That's just scary stuff. Now, what's less scary is Pamela Wallin paying back $100,000 to the Senate and suggesting that the lynch mob got her. Give me a break.
That whole lynch mob mentality doesn't quite work for me. So, but yeah, no, she's reimbursed the travel claims.
Yes, good for her. Good for her.
So she
can complain about it.
$38,600.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pamela. Thank you.
So here's the quote, though. Here's a quote directly from Pamela, though. I wish to make it clear, I was not treated fairly by the Deloitte review, which was not conducted in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles, nor have I been treated fairly by the Senate committee. Evidence that cast doubt on the correctness of the amount owing was either ignored or disregarded during the review. So apparently, Deloitte doesn't follow GAAP.
I don't know if they're trying to cast
persons on the company or trying to cast doubt on what have you, but something like that is probably going to hurt their bottom line.
A wee bit.
But I have no reason to doubt that Deloitte would act completely above board on something like this because it's all about integrity.
I'm agreed. And if they don't, large regrets. So you just don't do that kind of stuff, and hopefully they don't. And they don't become a company like that or these are people who are responsible for their actions. We're not talking about corporate citizens, your regular corporate citizens, especially CEOs and people who are in charge without any responsibility to the people beneath them.
No, most definitely. I mean, there's too much at stake for there's too much at stake for them to actually do anything like that. I mean, that's just rampant stupidity if they do something like that.
Absolutely. So hopefully this means that there'll be less money required in the budget of the Senate, because only money that should be taken out is being taken out now, right? Isn't that what our hope is?
That is the hope, yes.
Oh, and then hopefully we'll succeed in that in that goal. As speaking of goals, Stephen Harper is doing his pipeline push.
Mm.
Well, I thought this pipeline thing was dead. What happened there?
So are we talking about the East-West now? We're not talking about Keystone XL, right? There's a couple different pipelines that he's pushing right now. One of them is Keystone XL, which is designed to go all the way down to the Texas Gulf.
Which is having problems in the U.S.
Open up trade between provinces.
That one's having trouble, as far as I know, was having trouble in the U.S.
For the most part, though, they're open because they conducted a new environmental assessment and approved, apparently, quote-unquote, in principle, approved a new pipeline. So, you know, that's where we stand on that. I'm just going to see if I can find anything else on it here. But
he was pushing the Northern Gateway and the Kinder Morgan pipeline projects.
Yeah.
So, yes, and that's what he was out stumping for. And these are jobs. These are ways for Canadians to work, aren't they?
They are. Oh, don't get me wrong. They are most definitely ways to work. But the real question comes down to how safe are they? You know, I mean, that's the real issue. I mean, there have been leaks in the United States. One of the leaks they caught in one of the states, they thought it was only 40,000 liters. Turns out it was over 600,000 of them.
Yes. Yes.
You know,
yes.
There's not enough inspection. There's not enough eyes on the ground for that sort of thing.
Has the technology improved?
Well, I'd like to think the technology has improved, but the problem is there's not enough inspectors. There's supposed to be an inspection agency in the States that's supposed to be able to survey all 36,000 different drilling and well operations. However, they only have 54 employees. That
yes.
would mean that in order to comply with actual U.S. regulatory standards, these employees would have to be out surveying at least 6 sites a day, every day, for the next 8 years to just catch up.
Yes.
And it doesn't work.
So
then, the whole problem with BP and what happened in the Gulf there was the fact that they hadn't actually been inspected in almost a dozen years. Do you know how much slips through the crack in that amount of time? And there's just not enough time to do that sort of thing. There's not enough manpower. There's not enough money behind it. And the crazy thing was the American oil companies were actually paying to self-regulate. They'd actually managed to push through legislation in the States where they could inspect themselves.
Well,
that's their own guys in the site looks around and goes, hey, it looks great to me. You got the American flag up. We're golden. And takes off.
But that, from what I understand, is supposed to have changed since.
Supposed to.
Let me guess. It's not going to change?
Not as far as I'm aware.
Okay. So now, one of the parties very interested in this pipeline are the Native Canadians. First Nations. And they seem a little concerned. Now, are they concerned because of these concerns with safety and the environment?
I'd like to think so, but the other thing is a lot of their concerns are hinged on guarantees from the federal government, and we know how good the federal government has been in upholding its guarantees to First Nations.
They've made guarantees to the First Nations?
You know, my understanding of the whole situation is, yes, there have been guarantees made by the federal government with regards to safety and inspections in the pipelines.
Again, I repeat, the government made guarantees?
Well, this is the Harper government.
They're worth as much of the paper
they're written on.
They've verbalized guarantees.
Yes.
Ah, I understand. See how I understand now? There's no intention to do anything. It's just, you know, it's like those inspectors.
It's called lip service.
And it's like the commercials. You know, we're going to make sure that the companies that spill oil will pay for the fixes. Right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we are so starved for energy, and I should be the last person to complain about that because I have a vehicle. I pay insurance and all that wonderful stuff to drive a vehicle around. I'm one of the guys who's to blame. You know, I should be walking more.
When it comes to fossil fuels, that might be the case. When it comes to electric energy, that's definitely not the case. Renewable energy resources.
Yes.
I mean, when you talk about wind and you talk about solar and what have you, the Ontario government is actually paying wind and solar companies not to produce. Because there's actually an energy surplus in Ontario right now, but our prices keep going up. Go figure.
So, should I be upset with that?
The fact that they're paying companies to build windmills but then not use them? Possibly.
All right, so that's a concern for me then.
Well, when it comes to hydroelectric power, yeah, that could potentially be a concern. There's actually excess capacity in Ontario right now.
So in other words, not only are we paying more for oil, gas, the reason probably is because we're paying other people not to create any other kinds of energy.
No, it's like the dirt subsidies to American farmers. It's less expensive for them to pay people not to produce than it is for them to buy their own produce. It's a rather interesting situation.
Like the wheat board?
Yeah, like the wheat board.
Gotcha. Okay. When
you really think about it, Frank, all of the farms around the world, whether it's for meat or produce or what have you, they produce way more than we can actually consume.
Wow.
But we don't actually see any of it.
Okay.
Because it doesn't make them any profits if they actually put all of the product out there.
So it's much like the watermelon that sits in our basement refrigerator that we forget about, goes bad, and goes directly into the compost.
Exactly.
I don't know if I like that.
I don't like it either, but you know the problem is these major corporations are so powerful, and they have such a grip on politicians both north and south of the border. And God, I'm starting to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, but they have such sway over our politicians that they can get away with stuff like this.
Really? I'm concerned that we're wasting money.
That's the key goal of every single business out there, is to get us to waste money.
Wow. Here I was thinking that business was good and made work for people and helped the economy. I just didn't realize it also helped nothing.
Yeah, well, you know.
Well, now that we've discussed an important issue like oil and energy and stuff and the waste of it and the paying for nothing, let's talk about something that means nothing but I find humorous.
Okay.
In an era when people are, you know, new age people, you know, these funny names that actors give their kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Northwest, that type of thing. Out of the media, and out of, you know, Hollywood, if you will, one of my favorite singers right now, not because of what he sings, but because of the talented guy that he is in the first place, referring to Justin Timberlake. He married Jessica Biel last year.
Yeah.
And she is now changing her name, not professionally, but in her personal life. She is now going to be known as Jessica Timberlake. She's taking on her husband's name. Do you know if that name is his real name, or is that just a...
As far as I'm aware, Timberlake is his real name.
Okay, good, because it really suck if that was his acting name, right? And then she takes on Mrs., you know... Yeah, so she's changing her name to Jessica Timberlake in real life, but she is for business and for, you know, her professional career. She is not changing her name. She still will be known as Jessica Biel.
No, still, that's got to make him happy, though.
But isn't that, you know, when you think about what's going on with these names and stuff, that's retro, right?
Well, taking on the other person's name, yeah, that's definitely retro.
Yeah, you know, well, you know, I don't want to say good for her because I have four daughters and I don't want to get in an argument with them. But I will say, hey, Jessica, props to you for doing something going against the flow. You know, she really is going against the flow, and good for her. Only because she did it. Now, I don't necessarily agree or disagree with it. And good for her that she married Justin Timberlake. The kid's a very talented guy. I like him, too.
He's got
a great
sense of humor, too.
Oh, doesn't he? And
I haven't seen him on Jimmy Fallon for a week. It was absolutely brilliant.
Yep. And on Saturday Night Live, when he's selling the wine on the street.
I'm sorry, but him dressed up as the giant flask was just awesome as well.
Wasn't it?
Oh my god, it's brilliant.
And I mention him because it seems, you know, Disney kids seem to really go off the deep end when they leave Disney.
Now, is there anyone in particular you're thinking of?
I don't have to think of one. There's more than one.
Okay, I mean, granted, there's Brittany. There's Miley.
Well, Brittany squared away. Like she had children, and I gotta give her credit, and this is the kind of credit I would give anybody. This isn't just a she's a star credit. This is a human being credit. Everybody, you know, has ups and downs in their lives. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has an opportunity to fix those mistakes, but not everybody does, and she did. And congratulations to her for that. I respect her for that. You know, it's very easy to have a life where there's, you know, very little acrimony or, you know, failure to, you know, basically be good for yourself, if I can use that term. So when you do end up in something down a bad road, it's not easy to come back. And as a star with a lot of money, that means you can really sink pretty low, because money can help you sink real low, especially when it comes to things like drugs and, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? So,
yep,
yeah, congratulations.
No,
like, so I wouldn't put her in the permanent Disney lunatics. But, you know, Miley's going through her thing. I read that she had a problem with a boyfriend and maybe she's acting out. Yeah, well, I figured that to begin with, you know. We talked about it last week, so I'm not going to get into detail about her. But there's a few other Disney kids that have had a couple of problems.
No, this is true. And the problem that you're going to find yourself running into is that, you know, when you're a Disney kid, you don't really learn how to grow up. You're on the mill. You're on the treadmill. You know, it's success and this and that and the other thing and fame, and you don't really have the opportunity to be a kid and to act out and to do that sort of thing.
The reason I mention this is because child actors historically have not had a very good life. You could probably count on one hand how many child actors through a long history of movies, television, etc., like Mickey Rooney, for example, probably one of the only ones that grew up and had a career right through, you know, to being an adult and quite old. He's still, I think, in his 70s. When he's still in his 70s, he's still doing stuff. And I think he's still alive. He must be like in his 90s-something. You know, there aren't that many TV stars, kids, whatever. Shirley Temple did okay, you know. But that's me going pretty far back. It is tough, I guess, being a child star.
The thing is, most of us will never know that. And I'm really complaining about not knowing that, but...
firsthand, we won't know about it.
No.
Right?
It'll be so, vicarious.
You know, absolutely. So, it's supposed to drop in temperature. Now, we've done news, we haven't done sports. We've done current events. The weather. I guess we just had our Indian summer. So my wife told me. She said, Frank, that was our Indian summer, those 2 days when it was 110 degrees.
I think that's about it. I hope that's about it. I don't want to go back to those temperatures again.
God. It was like 2 or 3 days of that was really... Is that the ice cap melting? Is that what that is?
I honestly have no idea. I mean, I know it was really nice to have the warmer weather-ish. I'm glad it's done with now. If it doesn't come back until next year, then I'm fine.
Okay. Now, just so that people, you know, we all get so upset and worry about, you know, the environment and how we're destroying the environment and these people who are ultra concerned about the environment, you know, what they forget to mention and what they don't mention enough is it's not really a concern for people like me because I probably might have 10, 15 years left. Somebody starts laughing. So it's really not a concern for me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, this is a concern more for my kids and maybe their kids, you know. But if the world ends at that time, really, how important is that to me?
Yeah, it's not going to make a lick of difference for those who only have, you know, 15 to 20 years left. It is more of a concern, obviously, for those that have, you know, a good part of their mortal span left. But there's only so much you can do.
Because you're not going to ask me to have a conscience, I hope. Because this is the new millennium. This is the new millennium. You don't need a conscience. It's not one of the things you need to get by in life today.
No, definitely not.
Or taste.
Well, taste helps, but no, it's not entirely necessary.
The taste you're referring to isn't the taste I'm referring to. I'm not talking about how a Big Mac tastes.
No, I'm talking about taste like other tastes.
Yeah, like some of the stuff that you see people wearing.
Exactly.
Like Miley Cyrus.
Or what she's not wearing for most cases.
And we're back there again.
Doesn't it?
Well, you know what? Sex sells.
Madison Avenue just said that 40 years ago.
There you go. So... any subject you want to hammer? We were talking on... You were texting me an interesting story. You remember?
Well, what was it that I sent you? Was it about the Michael Waltrip Racing?
Yes.
Ah, yes. No, it's it was a rather, rather interesting situation that... NASCAR fined Michael Waltrip Racing $300,000 for illegal team orders. Or something to that effect. Basically, what Michael Waltrip Racing was trying to do was trying to get one of their drivers into the chase. So he ordered, apparently, according to the NASCAR review of the team radio logs, they ordered one of the drivers to spin out to bring out a caution, which would then, you know, allow the pack to bunch up, which would then allow another one of their drivers to act as an active blocker and slow up other drivers to prevent somebody from finishing in a certain position so that another one of their drivers could actually enter the race. One of the drivers they blocked was Jeff Gordon, who has now been added as the 13th driver to the 12-car NASCAR chase for the Cup. So, yeah, while they may have partially succeeded in initially blocking him, they didn't ultimately succeed. And the fact that they were so absolutely transparent about it is something that kind of, you know, I've spoken about parody before and how parody, P-A-R-I-T-Y, not P-A-R-O-D-Y, although that's rapidly what NASCAR is becoming, P-A-R-I-T-Y, parody, when it comes to NASCAR, was all because all the cars were designed to be exactly the same. The only difference was supposed to be the skill of the drivers. And this whole race fixing scandal with Michael Waltrip Racing just totally blows that out of the water. So, you know, I'm a little upset about that because it does sort of tarnish the supposed integrity of Michael Waltrip Racing and NASCAR in general. But you do what you can, and you carry through with it. I mean, as currently, NAPA's reviewing their sponsorship with Michael Waltrip Racing.
Yes.
Because of what had happened. Nuts and the bolts of it is somebody did something they wasn't supposed to do and they got burned for it. So
and they should
get
burned.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, what
and
basically happened... during the final laps of the race, Brian Vickers, a Michael Waltrip driver, slowed down, was ultimately allowed his teammate Martin Truex Jr. to beat Jeff Gordon by 1 point in the final regular season standings to earn a spot in the chase. And that happened with Bowyer intentionally spinning out. So, you know, you got to look at the final end results and how they got there. And it was just, I don't know, it's a little too convoluted. And I mean, it's a little for me to kind of understand because normally you don't associate that sort of skullduggery with good old boys.
Yeah, but you know what? There is a lot of money. And
money,
you know what they say about money?
Money talks, bullshit walks?
No, I was going to go with, you know, money corrupts people.
Well, that's true.
And you know, it never seems... The nice thing about money and what's amazing about money, it doesn't matter how much you have, you still got to have more.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an addiction.
This is true.
All right, well, we've used up a little more than a half hour of the show tonight. I think we've covered everything we could possibly cover.
All right, call it a night. I'm going back to drinking.
No, just what we should do though is we should get into talking about sports since that's really our strength. But I just wanted to hit that stuff early and make sure that we got rid of everybody who might interrupt our thinking. And in case you want to interrupt our thinking, the number is 714-242-5250. That's 714-242-5250. Call us here in L.A. That's right. We're in L.A. I used to kid you into thinking we were in Canada. No, we're in L.A. That's an L.A. number. You know, I don't know what to say about this. And this is something that I think is interesting because finally – the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are finally in the Western Division where they belong again.
No, this is true. I'm actually very happy with the realignment. So that's a good thing for the CFL.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
What does 4 plus 5 equal?
9.
Is it an even number?
9.
Exactly. Achtun. Achtun, mein Führer. No. So basically, one team's going to have a bye week on its own every week.
Yeah, it looks like that.
Right?
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be a good idea that they decide and hopefully bring in Moncton or Quebec, whichever's ready to jump in? ASAP?
I think it'd be really, really great if they did actually have 10 teams. Because, you know, I mean, as it currently stands now, there's one weak sister every year. You know every year that there's one team that just ain't going to make the playoffs. You know, if you introduce 10 teams, you can expand it, and it's a little more exciting that way. There's a little more of a fight not to be on the ass end of the scoreboard. I don't know, maybe it's just me being overly optimistic about competition levels within the CFL, but I wouldn't mind seeing 10 teams. I wouldn't mind seeing 8 teams make it. Maybe that's just me.
And you know what? We talked a little bit earlier about the fact that earlier in the week about the fact that what makes the CFL so interesting, like unlike any other league. I don't think there's a league that only has 8 teams in it of a reasonable professional stature.
No, I mean, the closest I can think of that comes to that would be the National Lacrosse League. But...
Right. Right. And the NLL has a lot more teams than 10. Don't they? They have like 16, don't they?
No, not even close. Actually, to tell you the truth, It's Bandits. It's Buffalo, Calgary, Denver, Colorado, Edmonton, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Rochester, Toronto, and Vancouver. It's actually 9 teams.
So they're like the CFL.
Yep. Those are the 9 teams that are actually currently listed on the NLL website. In the East Division, you've got Buffalo Bandits, Philadelphia Wings, Rochester Nighthawks, and the Toronto Rock. On the West, you've got the Calgary Roughnecks, Colorado Mammoth, Edmonton Rust, Minnesota Swarm, and Vancouver Stealth. So they've got 9 teams just like the CFL.
Gotcha. Well, the reason I mention this is that it does create an interesting, situation. One that other leagues have been working on for years, trying to almost replicate being a smaller league. And by that I mean wild cards. Wild cards have become very popular in sports, haven't they?
Yeah, just a bit. And I can appreciate that, though, because it offers an opportunity for those that aren't established teams to try to make it in.
Right. In other words, teams closer to the bottom.
Exactly. Because, I mean, you have your Boston, you have your Bo Sox, and you have your Yankees, who you know are going to be there every year because they buy a team. But then the wild card offers teams that may not necessarily have as much money but are talented the chance to, rise above and get in.
And how do the Blue Jays get involved in the good part of being in a league?
Well, they got kind of lucky back in the early 90s. The fact of the matter, though, is it just seems like their owners just don't want to spend the money. They don't
or
want to,
no,
they
or,
don't
or,
see what it they, takes they, to attract the top flight talent.
It's very simple what's wrong with the Blue Jays. It's very simple what's been wrong with the Leafs for years. And we may finally have someone steering the ship that actually deserves to be steering the ship. If you know what I mean.
You're talking about Lewicki?
Yeah. I say this only because, and this is why I say it, a lot of people don't like what's going on, what he's doing. I don't know too much about, the inner workings of sporting franchises other than to be a viewer. You know what I mean? An interested party, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And, Lewicki's talking about, he's saying, if you don't win, you don't belong here. We've heard for years, if you read the papers now, Toronto FC, former mayor David Miller has given back his tickets. He's very unhappy with Toronto FC and what's going on, what Lewicki has done. The mass firings and the constant upheaval at Toronto FC, they've been there for, 7 years or 8 years or something. They haven't made the playoffs once. They've been always at the bottom of the league. They get players of great reputations, great talent, and then they move on. They go somewhere else. So really, in my opinion, if Buddy says, I'm firing you because you didn't accomplish what you were supposed to accomplish, which is bring in some decent players, I agree with him. Don't you?
No, definitely. I mean, there are expectations to perform. And unlike pretty much any other job, sports is where it's really, really obvious if you aren't doing your shit right.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, people have so many excuses that, with Burke, he was let go. And some might suggest that the team would have done what it did, even if they didn't let Burke go. But I disagree. I happen to think that the change in the leadership structure at the Toronto Maple Leafs is what made them make the playoffs. And when you hear, it's what you hear and what you don't hear, when it comes to stuff like this. When you hear players saying, this guy wants to win, they're saying this guy wants to win. That means they've gotten the message. They have to win. Because if this guy really wants to win and he's not just blowing smoke, which is usually what the Leaf, brass has always done over the years, they just blew smoke,
Yeah.
then that's a good thing, isn't it? Like, you know, if the guy's actually saying win or get out, that's the kind of, you know, leadership that hasn't existed in Toronto for franchises, almost any franchise in Toronto. You know, you've got The Rock that have won a championship and basically, you know, win a championship or get lost. You know, that's the attitude. It's a real, like the owner wants to win. He doesn't want to talk about winning. He wants to win. There's a difference. There's a subtle difference. And the subtle difference is exhibited by the actions taken when you don't win. And I disagree.
So the franchises where they're actually serious and committed to their stated goal of bringing the championship back to Toronto, if you don't perform, you're done.
And that's a good thing.
Yes, almost definitely. And it puts the onus on the players, and it puts the onus on the coach to actually get their shit wired to do what they're supposed to do. Pardon my French.
No, you know, and this guy that got canned, Payne, I think his name was, the GM of TFC. He went out to get some players, and he didn't succeed, so he was fired. I don't see a problem with that.
No,
nope,
I don't have a problem with that at all.
Right? You know you need good players. If you can't find good players, why do I have you in this position?
Well, here's one thing I will give TFC credit for, though. Because they've been sucking the bag, they did actually lower their season ticket prices back to their original year one levels, because they realized the fans weren't going to take their shit.
I know, but what good is that?
Well, you know, I mean, at least it gives the fans sort of an indication. And again, this plays into Toronto's love of mediocre teams.
I don't agree with that statement. I think what you want to say...
You don't believe it has a history of fielding mediocre teams, Frank?
That's not what you said. You're implying... No, never mind. It wasn't even an implication. It was a very simple statement that Toronto fans love mediocrity. But they don't.
We do. Look at how much we support the Leafs.
But that's not about mediocrity.
Okay, it's about supporting teams that really, really suck then.
It's about
because the Leafs have been shit-tastic for the past 40-odd years.
I get what you're saying, and you're right about your review of the organization, the team, whether it was owned by Harold Ballard or whomever. Till now, till Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, the Teachers Pension Fund, Toronto Dominion Bank, all these wonderful corporations that, and now, you know, Rogers and Bell own it now.
I better be careful. I say Bell might be listening. I could lose my cell phone contract.
There you go. That would be a big disappointment. No, I disagree with you for this reason. It's not that Toronto fans like a loser, love a loser or whatever. It's the only option they've got in a sport that is the most popular sport in this community by far. And the popularity isn't because the team sucks. The popularity is because it is our country's favorite sport in our biggest city that has only one team. And we should have another team. You know, but I understand what you're saying, because when you take a look at Montreal, which is not as big as Toronto, but when they lose, people don't show up at the stadium. So
yeah,
I think a more accurate statement would be that the fans in Quebec, in Montreal, do a better job of showing their displeasure in a way that cannot be ignored, as opposed to the sheep that go to the Air Canada Centre.
Are you thinking the 50s? Because I'm thinking the 50s when you say voicing their displeasure, Frank.
Well,
you know
they
what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Well, they burned down the city almost.
Oh yeah.
And if anybody, what we're talking about is Campbell. The commissioner of the National Hockey League suspended Rocket Richard. and Montreal almost burned down the city because of it. That's what you're referring to, right?
Yes, sir, I am.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. And you know, I'll agree with you that Toronto fans will put up with a loser, but they don't love a loser. They put up with it better. And besides that, especially now, corporate interests in Toronto are many. You know, part of their shill process, as you know, is giving away tickets that are bought by companies that are tax write-offs. And I would go as far as suggesting at least 60 or 70% of those tickets are purchased that way. And I'm probably wrong, but it sure seems that way.
Yeah, it definitely does.
You know, so, you know, I mean, of course, the fans don't care if they lose. I'm here for on a free ticket, man. What do I care? You know,
yeah,
and that
company paying for it.
Yeah. So, you know, and besides, it's cool to be here. Don Cherry's just over there. See him? He's over there.
Oh, hey, look, Rob Ford's drunk over there again. Wait, did I say that? I'm sorry.
Oh my goodness. We gotta stop picking on
no,
him.
No, not really sorry.
We gotta stop picking on him. I like him. I like him. I do.
Why? Because
I think you know what? No, but I happen to believe, and I believe this with all my heart, and please nobody, I'm not kidding, okay? I want to make this clear. I'm very serious about this, and this is a very serious opinion of mine. He's going to make a great Santa Claus this year.
Oh, no arguments there, Frank.
Cherry cheeks and all.
Provided by Jack Daniels.
Provided by whichever. So you know, he's you know, we shouldn't pick on him. I do like him. And the reason I like him is that, you know, he's no different than any other politician, in all honesty. People can try to pretend that he is. But you know what? He just has different problems other than other, you know, mayors and politicians. But, you know, the people voted for him. Stop complaining. When the time comes, vote him out. If that's how you feel. I'm not saying to vote him out. I'm just saying if that's how you feel. So
well,
how did we end up back in politics? I thought we were talking sports. Okay, so expansion. I started by talking about expansion in the CFL. Fantastic. Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. We got to have some more of that. I like it. And
as long as it's up to the state, I'm on board with that too.
Moncton. Moncton's my vote. What's your vote?
Sorry.
Before you choke to death.
Wow. Yeah, I got a popcorn curled out the wrong way. My vote's for Halifax.
Okay, you got Halifax.
Yeah, it's a great city. It's a great environment. They've got really great folk there. I think it would be absolutely fantastic. Sorry.
You sound like you're getting emotional about them getting a team. You're sounding emotional.
Oh, it would be wonderful because you know what? When I go out to the East Coast with my girlfriend to visit her family, I can catch a CFL game.
There you go.
There we go.
Are you all right? Have a drink. Don't choke
to
death.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be okay.
Okay, good. So I got a question just came over Facebook.
All right.
They asked that I not give their name. The question is, what kind of guy is Aaron William Freeland?
There's a loaded question.
Now, I will tell you that this is a young lady. She's not looking for a relationship. She just has a curiosity because she's obviously has her interest piqued in the kind of person that you are. Shall we burst her bubble or?
I'll go for it.
Well, go ahead. I'll let you burst her bubble.
No, give her your opinion of me, Frank. I don't want to.
Oh, hang on a second. Got another question. And this other guy wants to know about my personality and what I'm really like.
No goodness.
You know, I got the same answer for both. What you see is what you get. Well, in this case, you can't see us. In this case, you can't see us, so really you don't know what you're getting. What you hear is what you get. How's that?
Yeah, I'm not the kind of person to sugarcoat anything. I'll give it to you straight.
Yeah. And, yes, in other words, you'll get it dry. Don't worry about it. there is a lot of kicking and screaming when Aaron and Frank are involved.
It's usually the good kicking and screaming, though.
So the CFL has 9 teams. We hope that they expand. Both of us are hoping they expand into the Blue Nose country there, up around those parts there, over there, Dar East, their place, side by
east. Oh, you know what, Bai? I think it'd be absolutely great if they went out to the East Coast. Stay where you're at till I come where you're too going on in that league, you know?
There you go. Have you watched any of the new shows that are on TV? We always talk about this on Friday because we both like television. You're more of a game guy, but I like television. Have you seen a show called Satisfaction?
I have not. I have heard of it, but I haven't actually watched it.
Well, this guy, one of the guys, one of the characters, is lying in bed, and this beautiful girl enters the doorway. Beautiful, beautiful, physically appealing. She looks at him, and she whispers, "Don't say anything." And then she starts to talk, and she's talking with a heavy Newfie accent. He starts getting scared. And there's this nosy guy across the street, you know, it's one of those apartments with, you know, windows pointing out at each other, like feet apart, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And he starts talking to her, and then turns out it ends with the suggestion that she could end up being his daughter. She could end up being his daughter. And he slams the windows shut, and the other guy's trying to run, and he's asking her not to talk because it was a big turnoff. I wonder how Newfies feel about that. That's what was going through my head.
I'm not 100% sure. I've actually really thought about it, to be honest.
I mean, I've never had a girlfriend that's a Newfie, but I hung out with a lot of Newfies, a lot of New Brunswick folks and people from Nova Scotia, and I don't understand what the problem is. I mean, they made it funny, and you could actually, in my opinion, I could see the humor in it, and they pointed it out really well. When in reality, I don't think that's a crazy thing. I mean, a girl is a girl, a person is a person, and what they say and what they are is what matters, right? It never occurred to me that an accent would be something, but I guess I have to realize that that's quite possible because look what happens to girls when they hear English accents. The reverse is true, right? The reverse is true. So why wouldn't an accent also turn you off? I just never occurred to me until I watched the show. I just thought I'd mention that.
Well, there's somewhat to be said for the Scottish accent, too. I mean, it's kind of appealing, don't you think?
Yeah, but as much as haggis is.
Well, you've never really had the right kind of haggis, then, have you, lad?
If innards are your thing, congratulations. Wrapped in the stomach, ugh.
Well, see, here's the funny thing. Everybody thinks it's that. It's actually not. It's spices, it's oatmeal, it's rice, it's onions, it's some herbs, all wrapped up in a sheet stomach and boiled that way. It's not actually guts. It's like a sausage. No, it's a sausage. That's basically all it is. Yeah. I mean, everybody has all these conceptions. Oh, my God, haggis, it's gross. It's boiled in the sheep's stomach. What the do you think your sausages come in? It's condoms filled with meat.
Whoa, so, I'm not sure that's true, man.
No, think about that
I'm
for a second.
That isn't true.
They're sheepskin condoms. Right?
You're really ruining this for me because now I'm thinking back to how many times I've stuck a fork inside a sausage and it squirted out like crazy.
No, but I mean,
now
honestly,
you've ruined
haggis,
sausages.
I'm not going to lie. Haggis does get a bad rap. But that's only because it's,
that was you made a pun, you made a funny. Did you catch it? You made a funny.
Yeah, I got that one.
Agus gets a bad rap. Oh,
yeah.
Did you? Yeah,
I
right.
I totally meant that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
No, but honestly, I mean, Haggis does really get a bad rap. It is actually really, really good stuff. They even make dessert Haggis. As funny as that sounds. But no, I mean, the people that bag on Haggis have never actually tried it.
I'm one.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, I got
haven't
my
tried
mother.
It. You're
my
right.
mother's conservative
and
Chinese. My father and I got her to try Haggis when we went on a trip to Scotland back in 99, and she loved it.
Oh, cool.
It's not what you think it is. Everybody's like, oh, it's nasty, it's gross, it's disgusting. It's not. It's basically a sausage.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure if I knew your neighborhood a little bit better, Frank, I could probably point you at somebody that would sell you a haggis, and it would be good.
Well, actually, I have a Scottish friend.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if she makes haggis, so I'll have to ask her.
Well, the only other thing that I can recommend when you have your haggis is you have it with tatties and neeps and a wee dram of scotch. And that'll make
you experience. Well, one out of three ain't bad.
You know what neeps, right?
Nope.
Okay. Traditionally, haggis is served.
Don't know what neeps. Nope to neeps.
Neeps are turnips.
Oh.
Haggis is traditionally served with mashed potatoes, turnips, and scotch.
A drizzle of scotch?
No, a shot of scotch.
Oh, okay.
Really, a Scotsman would drizzle scotch on haggis. Come on.
Well, you know the one about the Scotsman that dies. The three buddies promise that if one of them dies first, that they'd pour scotch all over his grave.
No, I haven't heard that one.
No?
Does it end up with one of them on the ground with a straw? Go and give it back, you bastard.
No, it actually ends up. It ends up with one guy looking. Drinking, and then the other guy he goes, listen, you don't mind if I pass this through first, do you? Okay, so the opposite of a straw. When it comes to food from Britain, people make a lot of fun out of food from Britain. Not just Scotland.
Well, I'm mostly convinced that most of the food in Britain was conceived on a dare.
Is it like, I don't know, because, roast beef comes from there, doesn't it? Isn't that a British?
Wellington, all that sort of stuff comes from the UK.
That isn't bad.
Well,
that's
and
pretty
I've never
good.
Heard anybody complain about mashed potatoes.
And that's an English thing?
Well, Irish, Scottish, British sort of. Thing, yeah-ish, I guess. I mean, you got to do something with potatoes to make them more interesting, right?
And I've never had a bowl of Irish stew I didn't like.
Exactly.
You know? So, maybe because there isn't as much variety, people give it that kind of,
It's entirely
bad rap.
Possible. When you have a society that's raised on cheeseburgers and the 11 secret herbs and spices from the Colonel, getting them to try different things is a little bit of a tough sell.
Yeah, unfortunately, my culture has very popular food choices.
All right, you're talking about pizza and spaghetti and what have
you. Yeah. Italians are, in the French, and it's the variety, I think, that more or less is the thing. But when you think about it, it's all about reputation, too, because, the English have, their fish wrapped in a newspaper.
This is true.
Right?
There's nothing
that's
wrong
pretty
with
good
the
stuff.
Old shellfish chips.
Yep. That stuff's pretty good. And the ink gives it a little extra flavor.
You can get it tinted by opinion if you want.
There you go. It kind of got ruined when color came in because, never mind.
It was no longer shades of gray.
Exactly. It's all different kinds of color. My fish is orange. That's because we had a sunset on the front page of the newspaper. So basically, we as people You know, we'll slide into this and you know, this thing that's going on in Quebec, where you know, we're not being accepting of all other races. Have you seen the ad in the newspaper looking for employees that want to leave Quebec because of the law that will not allow people to show their religion or represent the religion in any way at work? Have you seen the?
You've got most of that right, Frank. There is one little key difference, though. In the legislation, it speaks to not being able to wear any religious devices. For example, yarmulkes, burqas. You obviously can't wear your kirpan. However, you are allowed to wear a crucifix as long as it's not larger than the average size.
What the heck's the average size?
I thought you could only have it
on the inside.
No other type of religious show, with the exception of crucifixes. That's what the legislation is. They're like, well, you know, you can't wear this, you can't wear your yarmulke, you can't wear a turban, you can't wear your burqa.
However,
you are allowed to wear your crucifix.
So I guess being Catholic, I'd be okay with that law.
Well, of course, it panders to the PQ base in Lac Saint Jean, and it panders to the PQ base outside of the major metropolitan cities where the predominant religion still is Catholic
or Christian.
Well,
for
yeah,
want of a better
but
term.
In general, Catholic. The fact of the matter is they basically banned every single religious symbol with the exception of the Christian cross, which
My understanding is that you just it can't be out in the open. So as I recall growing up in a very Jewish neighborhood, your yarmulke could be worn underneath a hat, and that's not a problem.
Yeah. When was the last time you saw an oversized Star of David on somebody like bling? But I mean, the real issue that we're getting into here, Frank, is that they banned every single other type of religious expression with the exception of a Christian cross.
The way I heard it was the cross could be anything as long as it's not visible.
Well, my interpretation of it, from what I've read of the legislation, is that you can wear this cross openly.
Well, then, in my opinion, and I don't mind giving it. In my opinion, then that's discrimination.
Yep, and that's the whole issue behind the law. Now, what's really interesting is Drainville, the guy that originally proposed the legislation, apparently hadn't really thought it through. Because a reporter asked him, he said, you know, well, what about courts? If you're going to outlaw religious symbols and what have you, you know, what about somebody that has to swear on a Bible in court? Is that going to be disallowed? And he didn't have an answer for that. He said, let me get back to you. What about street names? There's another
Saint Germain?
Yep, Saint Germain, Rue Saint Catherine, you know, Saint Sauveur. What happens to all of those place names? Are you going to have to rename those? Are we going to have a religious police? Because that's going to be hell implement.
But by your definition, those are Catholic names, so they're okay.
Well, no, because under the terms of the law, the only thing that's saved are crucifixes. Saint Catherine, Saint Sauveur, you know, Saint Maxim,
all of that would have to change. A crucifix is such an easy thing to hide.
Oh no, granted, but you know
I don't understand it. To me, that's just dumb. You know, I mean, you know, to say that when they didn't need to.
But you see, the thing is, and they weren't going to take down the gigantic cross on Mount Royal either, and they were going to leave up the giant cross in the Quebec legislature, but everything else is banned. And this, to me, is where the problem comes in.
Is it possible, and I will, I'm taking this to the nth degree and going way over to the other side of the thinking process, away from the way I think, but if I'm forced to figure out what would be a concern, Is it possible that some people be nervous having somebody, you know, take care of their health problems, issues, if they're wearing a burqa? You know, you don't know who they are. You can't see them. Would that make you a little nervous?
Not in the
I'm asking a question, that's all. Okay, so then
And speaking personally, if you've got the diploma on your wall, which means you've gone to medical school, I really don't give a rat's ass. You could be wearing a Bozo the Clown wig, a red nose, and clown shoes. As long as you know what you're doing and you're taking care of me, I really don't care what you wear. I don't care what your faith is. I don't care if you believe in the flying spaghetti monster. I don't care if you worship Cthulhu in your backyard. If you know what you're doing, I'm perfectly okay with you taking care of me.
So the Ontario ad shows a young lady.
Wearing a turban. Wearing a hijab.
Hijab, that's right. And it says, I don't care what you're wearing on your head, it's what's in your head that matters.
Exactly.
Which is what you're saying. And
that's
I agree with that. And I agree with that 100%. The only problem I have with religion, this is the only problem I have with religion. I have no other problems with religion. When religion preaches hate or murder, you know, when religion takes moral standards that we have in our country that are there because of what we are as a country, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's when I have a problem. In other words, as an example, I don't believe that Sharia law should be acceptable if it goes against, you know, our Constitution.
Yep.
So, doesn't that make me just as bad as what Quebec is doing? Is that not the same?
No, not at all. Not in the slightest. My take on it is this. I don't believe as Canada is a secular nation, I don't believe that religion has any place in politics whatsoever. I don't believe it should inform decision making. I don't believe it should inform policy. I don't believe any of that. I think religion politics should be separated by something that, you know, you shouldn't touch it. Religion and politics, as far as I'm concerned, should never mix. If I were a politician, I wouldn't touch religion with a 10-foot pole and a borrowed dick.
Okay,
how far away I would try to get myself from religion if I were a politician.
Now, I get you, but I don't know where you get the idea that we're a secular nation. Isn't the opposite?
Well, we're not on Christian principles.
Sure we are.
No, we're not.
We're a Christian country.
Now, where in the Constitution, where in the British North America Act does it state that Christianity is our state religion?
Okay.
Doesn't state that in our Constitution, we are not a religious nation. We are a secular nation.
Okay.
It's the same thing with the United States Constitution.
Here's how I'll explain it to you very, very simply.
I really don't want you to say Vox Populi, Frank.
What's
I really
Vox
don't want
Populi?
You to say because the majority of us are Christian, we're a Christian nation.
No. That's not it at all. The country was created by two different Christian cultures, one Catholic, one Protestant. They came to terms with the fact that they did not want to fight anymore and they wanted to create one country. You know, Upper Canada lost, Lower Canada won, right? Do I have that right?
Technically speaking, Upper Canada was British, so they won.
Okay, the other way around. Lower Canada, then Lower Canada. I don't know why I thought that, but that's okay. Probably because I – never mind. So anyway, the long and short of it is the Christians fought, being the Catholics and the Protestants. The Protestants won, but as part of the agreement between the Protestant and Catholic cultures that made up the people of that country, otherwise known as Canada, which became known as Canada, British North American Act, obviously, like you mentioned first. And there was an agreement where the government would provide Catholic schools. That's why we have them in Ontario. So the government is in the business of teaching its people Catholicism. Why wouldn't you say that it's a Christian country?
All right. I'm going to go through a list of what are called secular countries by continent.
Well, and I changed the subject.
I'm going to the law here, so you have to bear with me. The secular countries in North America are as follows: Canada, Cuba, Honduras, Mexico, and the United States of America. In Section 2 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, Canada lists what are called the fundamental freedoms applying to everyone in Canada, regardless of whether they're a Canadian citizen or an individual or a corporation. Okay? Canada has a freedom of religion clause. According to Beverly McLaughlin, who's a renowned scholar, freedom of religion in Canada may have originated as early as 1759, when French-Canadian Roman Catholics were allowed rites of worship by their British conquerors. This is later reconfirmed in 1774 in the Quebec Act. The Constitution Act of 1867 provided for denominational school rights, yes. However, in 1955, the Supreme Court ruled in Chaput versus Romain that different religions have rights based upon tradition and the rule of law. However, those do not inform the laws of the country. That means we're a secular nation. We're not. Our laws are not informed or influenced by religion.
Okay. On the subject of laws.
Yeah.
Is it not true that if I spit on the sidewalk, I can get in trouble?
Now you're obfuscating, Frank.
I'm who?
You're obfuscating.
What the heck does
that
mean?
You're trying to draw false equivalencies.
Oh, okay.
Don't do that.
No?
No.
But I want to.
Well, okay. You can if you want, but I'm going to keep smacking you down.
Nah, it ain't going to work. the point is, it's all interpretation, and that's what I'm basically saying.
I understand. Where you're coming from. However, freedom of religion, Section 2A of the Charter in 1985 was R versus Big M Drug Mart, where Chief Justice Brian Dickinson wrote that freedom at least includes freedom of religious speech, including the right to entertain such religious beliefs as a person chooses and the right to declare religious beliefs. However, this also prohibits imposing religious requirements on people.
Yes.
So that basically
I agree with the premise that secular government is better than ones run by one religion. That goes without saying.
I'm not going to argue and say that we weren't founded on Christian principles.
That's all I was saying, and I was just trying to make a point from an angle that I don't want to say. I was doing the devil's advocate thing, because that would be kind of an irony, wouldn't it?
Slightly.
Right. So.
Oh, you being.
But essentially, that's what I was doing. I was playing the devil's advocate.
Completely. But again, the major distinction that has to be drawn is we are not a nation. We're not a Christian nation. We're a secular nation.
But if you speak to people, you know, it's like back in the day. When people used to say, what's Canada's national sport? Everybody always said hockey. But for a time, it wasn't. Until Parliament made it official.
Yep. This is true.
That's the point I'm trying to make. That's the only point I'm trying to make. It's all about perception, you know. What I do believe, and the secular part of what scares me about secular governments, and this is what happens, is that we end up with governments that are anti-religion. And that is as dangerous as religiously driven politicians and or government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking yin and yang here, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's the pendulum thing. It doesn't spend much time in the middle.
No, this is true.
Right? And I always worry about when it goes to extremes. I guess I'm one of those idiots that likes things down the middle a little bit. You know, I hate extremes. I hate overtly religious governments. I hate governments that hate religion. Somewhere in the middle lies a happy medium, but we just can't stop the pendulum for some reason. I don't know why. It just is the way it is. It's a battle, an everyday battle between those that are agnostic and those who are religious. And both of them give good reason and pause for anyone to follow them. Both of them. You know, there's good and bad in both. I just would like to think that we can be reasonable and understand that, you know, mutual respect should be the main driving force, whether you're a religious thinker or whether you're an agnostic. I think mutual respect is a key component that makes us better than animals.
No, I agree with you on that one.
And that's it. So, you know, as far as I agree with what you're saying, that, you know, just like secular, by definition, what does secular mean? Do I have to look it up?
Well, I can look it up for you. I got my browser open.
What does it mean exactly?
Denoting attitudes, activities, or other things that have no religious or spiritual basis.
You see? So in other words, being secular means you don't want anything to do with religion.
Well, you don't let it influence you.
Doesn't being an agnostic, doesn't that influence you?
Aren't you believe in a higher power, just not necessarily God.
Oh, really? Well,
yeah.
You look that one up for me too.
Yeah, no, most definitely. Agnosticism is actually a belief in a higher power, just not that one. A person who believes that nothing is known or can be known of the existence or nature of God or of anything beyond material phenomenon.
Huh. Okay.
So in other words, you don't necessarily believe in a Christian God, but you believe there's something out there that can kick your ass.
You just don't know what it is.
Exactly. That's agnosticism.
Okay. Well, I know what it is, but I believe, like, you know, I believe in a higher power.
Mm-hmm.
I believe what I believe, and it is what I believe, and I feel. See, my take on religion is different than a lot of other people's, and I'm not ashamed of it, and I'm not proud of it. I just don't think it's any of my business to influence anybody on what religion they should be. Like, publicly, I carry the cross in my heart. I don't carry it in my hand, you know, held out. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to explain. It is what makes me, but I don't sit there and wave it at people. I don't believe in that. I don't like or trust people who wave religion in my face.
So you believe in a higher power, but you don't proselytize.
No, I know that we're supposed to. That's what it says in the Bible. But I believe we can do it in a way that is less, I'm going to say negative. You know, because when religions start proselytizing, they tend to make mistakes. Because now opinion becomes part of the sales pitch.
And I'm
not a big fan of opinion as a driving force for changing my mind. You know, just because you think it's a good idea that I do something isn't necessarily the reason why I'm going to do it.
No, I don't know.
I'm going to figure it out, right? So, yeah, I got nothing against religion. Religion's awesome. I mean, you know, everybody should have a religion. I mean, it's fine. Just, you know, I'm not a big fan of religions that preach, you know, murdering and killing. And somehow it's justifiable. We went through that in the Christian religion many, many, many years ago.
The whole thing, Crusades.
Yeah. You know, nobody's perfect. Right?
Hey.
But
Yeah, it was a time of growth and expansion. You guys were still finding your feet. I understand that.
Well, you know, sometimes it's hard to practice what you preach.
Oh, most definitely.
Sometimes.
Although I do have to admit, there is a lady in the office that I work at who does actually follow the rules of the Bible.
Cool.
And it's actually quite refreshing. She doesn't eat shellfish. She doesn't eat hoofed mammals, specifically those with split hoofs.
Pigs.
She doesn't wear blended clothing. She doesn't do the whole tattoo thing.
Blended clothing?
The laws of the Pentateuch, which is pretty awesome. In a
blended
modern day
clothing.
And age.
Blended clothing? Blended?
Yeah, well, one of the laws is you cannot wear clothing made of more than one cloth. Cotton poly blends are a no-no, Frank.
Will I burn in hell then?
Oh, yeah, you will. Because it's a mortal sin. You eat
Son
bacon, a mortal sin. You get
Holy
a tattoo,
crap.
Mortal sin. You work on
that
a
means,
Sunday, that's a mortal sin. You eat shrimp,
I can't,
you're going
I
to hell.
I can't wear an Argo shirt?
Nope. More than one cloth. It's in Leviticus.
Well, because that's the first thing that came to mind.
Yep.
I can't
nope,
wear my
you
Argo
can't wear
shirt.
That. It's two different fabrics blended. You cannot wear that. Under the rules of the Bible, you cannot wear that.
I'm getting very concerned with this subject matter now.
You're
concerning me now. I mean,
why?
Well, because I don't want to burn in hell.
Well, nobody wants
I
to burn
mind
in hell.
I wouldn't mind getting a little extra sun, but I'm not too big on burning in hell.
Well,
that
you know, everybody knows the hell is always kind of...
It doesn't seem comfortable to me. It seems kind of uncomfortable. You know,
but,
I wouldn't
yeah,
mind...
There's a whole bunch of religious laws that are laid out in the Pentateuch that some people do follow, other people don't. The funny thing is, a lot of those laws in the Pentateuch are used as what are called clobber laws and clobber Bible verses by those people that are rabidly pro-life and anti-gay in the United States.
And
they're sticking.
Okay, so... And what about regular sex?
Did you
know, like George Carlin,
never said anything about homosexuality.
Get it over with quick.
Regular sex is just fine. What do you think "go forth and multiply" means?
Okay, so like man on top, get it over with quick.
Yeah, you know, strictly speaking, and for most people, that's not a problem.
I'm an artist. Yes.
You're the king when it comes to 3-minute masterpieces.
Absolutely. And I have hit the 90-second masterpiece too.
Hey, at least you're honest about it.
Well, my wife says it's a 30-second masterpiece, but I don't believe her.
You know, it's funny they say that you burn as many calories during sex as running 5 miles, and I keep thinking to myself, who runs 5 miles in 30 seconds?
Well, apparently, wow. Now, I was watching sex. Now sex is the subject. Funny joke on Big Bang Theory.
Okay.
The reference was made that one of them's the girlfriend. He was making a reference to a euphemism, anyways, a reference to saying, you know, she's dreaming about this guy and it's not you because he's got an English accent. She thinks she's a chicken pecking at corn. My wife pointed the image out to me and I went, yeah, I guess that's it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Lovely. Thank you, dear. I really needed that. I really needed to know that. And yes, it, you know, sex sells. We talked about that. Sex sells.
Yes, it totally does.
I mean, and that's fine. And that's fine as long as it's limited to people of age, whatever that age, that legal age is. As long as people are willing, not dragged into it. as long as people aren't slaves to it, if you will. You know, I mean, it is what it is. And this is why Miley Cyrus worries me, because she's kind of glorifying it. You know, the behavior, not the act, and not, because love is a great thing, and one of the best ways to show you love somebody is through that three-letter word.
Yeah. Here's what I find most upsetting, Frank, and you're going to have to bear with me on this for a minute.
Cool.
Everybody's upset at Miley Cyrus for what she did during the VMAs. Most of the complaints are coming from people that like titties in their videos. And that like that sort of thing. And that like risque dancing. So she goes out and she gives the viewing public what they want on a national stage. And she gets castigated for it. Meanwhile, a guy that's basically written a song about date rape and mixed messages gets away scot-free.
And you're referring to Robin Thicke.
Yeah, do yourself a favor and read the lyrics for Blurred Lines.
No, I already know the lyrics. I've heard song.
I just find it very, very hypocritical that everybody's jumping on Miley for doing what she's doing, when at the same time they're absolutely endorsing a guy like Robin Thicke for his music. It seems to me to be very hypocritical, very puritanical, and you know, I mean I keep expecting them to fire up the torches and grab the pitchforks, because Miley Cyrus gave the video viewing public of America exactly what they wanted. They wanted a good-looking woman gyrating on some dude who could probably be old enough to be her father, mainly because they're unsatisfied with their own personal sex lives and wish that through the gratification and the living vicariously through others, they could get that sort of thing.
But what about people like me who actually, seriously, don't think it is very appropriate?
Well, and that's fine. I mean, obviously, you're entitled to feel that way. I'm glad that you've expressed yourself. But the fact of the matter is, the majority of the people that are complaining are the people that want more skin on HBO.
I get that part. I just, again, it's somebody trying to bust through an image, and I get it. You know, that's all she's trying to do. In my opinion, she's just trying to bust through an image.
3 minutes. She did more for her brand than a team of publicists could do for her in 3 years. She really did. That 3 minute segment on the VMAs, she's done more for her self image and to raise awareness of herself than any advertising company could possibly do.
I get that. The same way Justin Bieber takes the telephone at a concert and shoves it down his pants and the girls get all giddy.
Yeah, exactly. And the worst part is, you wouldn't see gimmick that because he's Canadian.
But here's what I'm taking from the last 2.5 minute conversation we just had, is that if you're male and you perform inappropriately, whether it be lyrics or whatever, and like you said, you talk about date rape, that's cool. Nobody's all over him about it. But this girl does something that really is parallel to what he's saying. Actually, she's not asking for, someone to, she's not talking about raping somebody. She's just talking about giving herself up. And people are more upset about that than they are the guy who's taking something from someone that doesn't want to give it.
They are more worried about her expressing her own female empowerment through her song and her ability to make her own choices than they are about Robin Thicke.
I guess that's true. Every Friday I learn something thanks to you, Aaron.
I don't set out to teach, Frank. It just kind of happens that way.
Well, no, because what I was going to say is that, I've got a lot to learn. So don't feel too happy about yourself.
No, I don't. I don't ever feel happy about myself, Frank.
I'm a pretty blank page when it comes to knowledge. I'm one of those people that's not very smart but wants to be. How's that?
And you know what? I'm one of those people for whom a little bit of knowledge is a very dangerous thing. So.
And goes a long way.
Yeah, well, It works both ways. You're eager to learn. I'm happy to pass on what I have, but what I may have to pass on isn't necessarily 100% correct. It's tinted by my own filter.
So. Okay, I need to take a short break. We'll be back in a short break. Hey, Argo lifers, Argo fans, the Toronto Argonauts fan cruise is on the horizon. 7-night Eastern Caribbean cruise, February 1st through 8th. Argo fans, do you want to live it up? The ultimate cruise party on the high seas may be just what you need. Join reigning CFL Coach of the Year Scott Milanovic, the Grey Cup winning quarterback Ricky Ray, and members of the 2013 Argos cheerleaders on a 7-night voyage to some of the most exotic destinations in the Caribbean. Join the fun as we kick off the Argos Fan Cruise Week in Miami, Florida, with an action-packed tailgate party, including your newest friends. The party continues on board the Celebrity Reflection with exclusive events throughout the week that will have everyone talking. There is no better way than to spend the week by soaking up the sun, enjoying fine cuisine, hitting up the gym or spa, or simply partying the night away. Get ready to put your game face on and join the fun. For more information on pricing or to book, please call 416-929-1980, 416-929-1980, or toll-free 1-877-510-2751. That's 1-877-510-2751. Book early, because this is one huddle you can be a part of with the Toronto Argonauts. After four failed attempts, 64-year-old Canadian endurance swimmer Diane Nyad is the first to swim across the 160-kilometer Florida Strait from Cuba to Florida in just 53 hours without a shark tank. Right after reaching the shore of Key West, this is what our hero Diane Nyad had to say, swollen lips and all.
I got three messages. One is, we should never, ever give up.
Okay.
Two is, you're never too old to chase your dreams.
That's right.
Three is, it looks like a solitary sport, but it's a team.
Diane Nyad, what a hero, a true hero, and really appreciate what she accomplished. Did we talk about this last week?
No, we didn't touch on this at all last week.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring it up for you. So I didn't think we did. What did you think of that, this feat?
I thought it was incredible. I think it's a great accomplishment whenever somebody does something like that. My problem is there's a community of marathon swimmers that are now questioning the validity of her feat.
Uh-oh.
Specifically, they're looking at one particular period of time where she appeared to swim very, very quickly. Now, one of their other complaints is the fact that she apparently wore a mask, a jellyfish-proof mask of some sort to swim. The second is that this leg, which happened around roughly the same time she abandoned her last attempt, she seemed to swim very quickly over this certain stretch of time, faster than would be considered humanly possible.
So Superman took over for her?
Or she got an incredible boost of energy thanks to Red Bull.
Is that a problem?
These are complaints being raised by a group of marathon swimmers. Not me. I don't swim marathons. I do the dog paddle, or I float on my back on a chair with a beer. So I'm not really one to judge. I'm inclined to give her the credit for swimming the entire way, which is an incredible feat. And I think it's awesome.
But they're saying basically that she didn't, or had the help of some drugs or something?
They're claiming it's a possibility that she may have been on a boat for that period.
Oh, okay.
The water may have been rough.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I mean, I don't usually tend to listen to stuff like that, because to me it just sounds like sour grapes. Like,
but wasn't there a crew following her the whole time? Wasn't it all captured on film?
Well, there would be a safety boat. And one would hope that in the entire segment of raw, unedited footage, they'd be able to prove that wrong. But I'll be honest with you, I'm not taking these complaints of her quote unquote cheating very seriously. I'm more inclined to believe that she did it, because human beings can do incredible things when challenged.
Oh, why do you mention that? Because now just brought one. You brought one into my head.
Okay.
Golly. Now, I want to make sure I understand this correctly. They're selling tickets to Mars one way.
Yep.
Am I hearing that right? Like,
that is
by
correct.
By one way, we mean suicide.
Not necessarily suicide, no. The opportunity to finish out your natural lifespan on a place other than Earth.
Is there a place to be?
I'm reasonably certain that they'll probably build something once they're there to live in. It's a great human adventure. Honestly, think of it as pioneering. I don't think Perry thought that there would be shelters set up for him at the North Pole when he took off. It's not like they sent out an advanced team to build them shelters, you know what I mean?
Huh. So,
honestly, one of the ballsiest things you can possibly do. I'm going to throw myself in a metal capsule, travel for 8 months, and then get there and build my own house once I get there.
But
I think it's awesome, incredibly courageous. I don't think it's anything I'd ever have the balls to do myself.
Like, is there air there?
No. They'll be living on canned air.
And how will they have enough canned air?
I'm assuming that the ship will be built up in orbit, and they'll be able to cart everything up there that they need.
Like, we're not talking about going to a 7-Eleven to get a can of air.
No, but here's the other thing, though. On any spaceship that travels there, you're going to need fresh green vegetables, right?
Right.
You're going to have a farm.
Okay, right.
So this farm module will be able to exchange air. Because plants
okay.
are kind of good at that sort of thing.
Okay.
So it's not going to necessarily be recycled mechanically, but it will be replaced through through photosynthesis and through plants and the natural cycle of things. So not only will you have food from these green plants, you're going to get oxygen from these green plants.
That's
Once
the theory.
Once you're up in orbit, it's not necessarily a huge thing to construct an orbital elevator. If you bring the right materials with you, or you can capture an asteroid on the way in, theoretically it's possible to do this sort of thing.
To farm on Mars?
Yeah, sure. All you need is a closed module. You got sunlight. The Martian day is 24 hours and 39 minutes long. One rotation of Mars is approximately 40 minutes longer than a rotation of the Earth. You're getting roughly the same amount of sunlight. The fact that Mars's core no longer spins means that there's very little gravity. You're looking at approximately 60% of Earth gravity. It's possible to live on that. You'll have less joint pain, and you'll be lighter. There's water ice on Mars.
Wow.
You can set up a gigantic processing plant on Mars. All you'd need really realistically would be a jet engine.
Say hi to Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Let him finish his thought here. He's teaching me about Mars, Mike.
Oh, about the whole that Dutch project to send someone to Mars?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Go ahead.
To set up a terraforming plant there.
All right.
You need a couple jet engines. You need something to cart ice in to unfreeze it. You've got all the water you could possibly need. The aquifers on Mars are huge. They're 3 to 4 times the size of all of the aquifers on Earth. The groundwater there is usable.
I'll give you this.
I mean, it sounds a little bit daunting at first, but it can be done. The enterprising human spirit is definitely there for it.
Well, I'm surprised. So I guess I don't know if my wife and kids would be very happy with me doing this.
Well, you know, what do you really think? Do you really think they'd select you, though, Frank?
No, absolutely not. I, like, you know, what would they want a guy like me for? Old and useless. Speaking
not
of old.
Not necessarily. as long as you can pull your own weight, I think you'd be just fine.
I could pull my own weight. Okay, Mike,
oh,
you call us. We haven't got much time left. We've got just over 15 minutes. What do you want to talk about?
I mean, it's sort of a drastic change of subject from terraforming Mars, but I just wanted, I don't know if you guys are following the game at all, but my God, CJ Gables, I got to say, that's pretty jaw-dropping stuff that they're doing out there.
Which game are you talking about, Mike? The Hamilton game?
Hamilton,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a great game here. It's Hamilton's up 3 with about 2 minutes and 40 seconds left, and Calgary got the ball back. And, yeah, they're driving down the field.
Nice.
Good stuff. So give us a recap of the game.
No, the Ticats sort of stormed out of the gate. Burris had a huge touchdown pass to Fantuz. Their defense was fantastic. The former Argo, Brandon Isaac, had a huge interception. And I don't know, man. The Ticats defense has been absolutely phenomenal. They had, I think, 2 or 3 picks off Bo Levi Mitchell, and they really dominated the game. And for whatever reason, Calgary is still just down by 3 with a chance to still tie the game. So I'm just blown out. I don't even know how Calgary's still in the game. I mean, if I didn't see the score, I would have thought it would be Hamilton up by like 4 or 5 touchdowns, just by the way the game's been playing out. But I don't know.
Is Burris full value for the lead?
Better find that.
Yeah, no, he just threw this crazy interception in the red zone. And, like, Ken Austin, like, you should have seen the guy's face. First he, like, hunched over in disbelief. Then he just stared down Burris like, you've got to be kidding me. It's just like, oh, man. But I don't know, man. Frankie, you made the prediction that Burris might be out after a while, but I don't know. He's throwing these little weird interceptions every now and then. He might just find himself on the bench.
Well, it's just my feeling is that it's difficult for a GM, and he will be the GM, because I don't think he's going to continue coaching. I bet you he gives up the coaching reins next year, and if not next year, the year after that. I'm just not sure that he's a very easy guy to make happy. He's a very impatient guy.
Yeah, I love his post game, like, because, you know, TSN, they have those little things on their website where they show, like, the coaches' speeches, like, before and after the game. The one thing that stands out, like, of all the coaches when it comes to Austin is you can tell his players have a tremendous amount of respect for him. Like, to me, that means a lot. Like, that shows the type of guy, like, him and Milanovic, and I think Corey Chamberlain to a degree, they're the only ones that, when they do their big pregame and postgame speeches, every guy in the room's eyes are focused, paying attention. You know, you can see that. Like, other coaches, I mean, guys are just off doing stuff on the side, not even paying any mind to what he's saying at all. But Ken Austin, man, he's got, I don't know, he has the best speeches, though. The way he gets his guys fired up, and he just reminds me of the Fonz, man, from what's that show? What was that? Was that Happy Days?
Mm-hmm.
He's got that whole, like, you know, demeanor, and, like, you could tell that he's got that over-cockiness to him, but, it rubs off on his players, and the players buy into it, and I think he's a great coach, man. I think
he's a winner.
Might end up going to the Grey Cup. I really think so.
Well, you weren't listening to the show back when I, at the beginning here, before the season started. You know, it's how you finish. That's all it is. But now, Sinopoli just did something that Hamilton isn't going to like.
Just ran that back for a first with 1:58 left.
and ran it a long distance, let me tell you. So, yeah, so, that, you know, well, you know, this is the beauty of the CFL. I mean, you know, no team is stale. You know, a team can go from being good and bad real quick and back again to good. We've seen that this year. We've seen Montreal hit the mat, hit it hard, you know, and they basically face smushed against the, you know, the mat. They got up and they did some good stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And look at Hamilton. Look at Hamilton, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And now look at Saskatchewan with this problem that's going to cause. There's going to be problems in the dressing room now in Saskatchewan.
Oh. Oh, man. Did you see that they got? They just charged another player? Did you see
yeah,
that?
Yeah, three. That's three
guys.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
And that's going to be a hard – that's going to be a major distraction. The only thing I can say for Saskatchewan is that it's happening in the midway of the season. And with any luck, hopefully, if you're a Saskatchewan fan like you or any other Saskatchewan fan, that this thing rises up to the worst it's going to be and as quickly as possible and then gets quieted down before the season ends.
Yeah.
Or this could be a bad year.
And the sad thing is, if you look at this week for the Riders, first they lose Ray Williams with a torn ACL for the whole season. Then you back it up with potentially losing two really key guys because Dwight Anderson's probably their second-best defensive player, and Tosh Smith is a huge weapon at receiver for them. He's been their main deep threat. If they were to end up losing both those guys and you couple that with Ray Williams out, that's a huge blow to them. I mean, that to me could almost take them out of the run for the Grey Cup for now, I can tell, because you can't replace guys like that. That's man, it's a bad week to be a Ryder fan, that's all I got to say.
Yep, yep. It isn't pretty. It isn't pretty. And
I'm sorry to cut in here, Frank, but it's Riley, Anderson, and Smith that have all been charged with aggravated assault, yeah?
Yep.
So under CFL regulations, while the case is ongoing and the charges are pending, they're not able to play, yeah?
Actually, from what I heard, because I was following like the writers, they have like their sports radio show, and from what they said, they actually can until, you know, it's basically like it is until proven guilty. It's basically everything is on standby, so they could perceivably actually still play out this entire year.
By the way, side note, Calgary just scored 25-20.
Oh, yeah, I just saw that to Marquay McDaniel. McDaniel's got to love that against his old team.
Oh, definitely. Fucking the way he breaks the tackle at the 6-yard line and then dives into the end, that's just brilliant.
Especially because, earlier in the game, he dropped, a wide-open touchdown pass. That was a great way to redeem himself right there. That's beautiful. I'm seeing it. I'm on a little bit of an internet delay here with that, but, oh, man.
Yeah, that's a beautiful catch.
Yeah. I don't
know.
Who do you guys want to actually win, seeing that I guess neither of you are Ticat or Stamps fans? Yeah.
Oh, Ticat for sure.
Than Hamilton.
Okay.
That's just me for speaking because I hate Hamilton.
Oh.
I'm picking Hamilton. I like Hamilton.
Well, they got 1:15 to come back, Frank. You think you can get a big score?
Can they go for an extra point with a field goal?
Not only is it a kick through, he's got a safety on the other side.
Did I answer your question? Will they put it in the end zone is the question.
Well, that's tough.
With
1:18 left, I don't know if that's possible. But
in the CFL 1:18, they both could get a touchdown.
They could. Oh, man.
So
this
Frank,
is Burris' moment.
Last night, you sent me a quick message about Colin Doyle playing goal for the Six Nations Chief. I just found a little bit more of a link on the A game at Yahoo Sports. I'm going to flip that to you as well.
Okay.
I'm glad Colin is giving a little bit more respect to goalies because it's never a fun position to play. Well, I'm lying. It's great fun to play, but when you're putting on somebody else's stank, sweaty equipment, it's not fun.
No.
But the Chiefs actually had both of their goalies kicked out for illegal equipment, which meant that Colin had to step in for the last 11 minutes of play. Now, I know he played a little goalie in hockey when he played, but this was just a little bit different for him.
Just a little.
Yeah, you know. To quote him, he says, yeah, you know what, I have a lot more respect for those guys now.
And he should.
Oh, most definitely. That's the one thing I find is goalies tend to get very little respect, kind of like kickers.
Really?
Well,
I thought goalies were like the key thing that any team in the NHL needs in order to make the big run to the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. But he's talking about their personalities, not their contribution.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not necessarily – I'm not talking about the on-the-floor contribution because everybody appreciates that. But a lot of the times when things go wrong, especially in lacrosse because it's such a high-scoring game, Mike, Mm-hmm. Goalies are the ones that take the brunt of the abuse. Because
wow.
People will look at them and say, oh, well, you should have had that. But tending goal in lacrosse is a little bit different than tending goal in hockey. With hockey, the puck is only coming from one place, and that's off the ice.
Right.
It's very rarely ever coming from any place other than that. With lacrosse, you've got a ball that's coming from anywhere from 7 feet up in the air to 6 inches off the ground. So it's a little bit different.
And both.
Yep.
In the air, off the ground.
Yep. Yep. Bounce shots are one of the most difficult things for goalies to deal with.
Yep.
While they may look big when they're playing goal, there are still ways for players to find the back of the net when you're looking at a 4x4-9 goal. It's amazing how some of these guys will be able to put shots past you. There have been times when I thought I've had a corner sealed off, and they'll pop it past, and it's just like, how did that happen? Okay, Hamilton just got a first down, stop the clock.
Yep.
46 seconds left, first and 10.
Yeah, because he went out of bounds.
Yep.
We got a couple minutes left, and I know Mike loves to talk about the games that are coming up, so we'll do that. Well, the prediction tonight is going to be simple because you can base it on what's going on with less than a minute left in the game. So we'll move on to Winnipeg and Edmonton. I really think that's going to be the best game this week.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, the two teams that will be very hungry, and the Toronto-Saskatchewan game is going to be shock and awe.
Mm-hmm.
And the Montreal BC game is going to be a game where I really think that those two teams, they are both at this point in the season inconsistent. BC's been unbeatable at home, so I guess I'd have to go Calgary. Well, not going to count the Calgary Hamilton game. I'm going to go Edmonton, Toronto, and BC. Just because of what's happened in Saskatchewan. Otherwise, I would have said Saskatchewan. I think Saskatchewan's going to be a little bit distracted.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty close to yours. I'm just picking Winnipeg over Edmonton. I think Winnipeg is going to go on a little run here and give Montreal a run for their money for that third seed in the East. So I'm just going Winnipeg over Edmonton, and then I think the Riders are going to pull out over Toronto, and then obviously BC is going to blow Montreal out.
They're tough at home.
Yeah, plus Montreal never can – they can't – that trip out west always gets them no matter what. They always lose that game.
So here's
how about
the question
you,
for you guys when it comes to the playoffs.
Okay.
The way that everything's currently set up, you've got Toronto at 6-4, Hamilton at 5-5, Montreal at 4-6, and Winnipeg at 2-8.
Yep.
You've got Saskatchewan at 8-2, Calgary at 8-2, BC at 6-4, and Edmonton at 1-9.
Yep.
Now, this is and this is my old hockey sensibility coming in because I played in the league with 12 teams when I played back in the OMHA. It just doesn't seem right to me that teams that are 6-4 and 5-5 are making the playoffs with the same prospects and the same seeding as teams that are 8-2. I don't know if that's a cause of concern for you guys or a discrepancy or anything like that, but it just seems to me that teams with the better records should be the ones that make the playoffs.
Well, that's why you want to be Saskatchewan and at the end of the season. You want to be 12-6, and Calgary 11-5 or 11-7, or if you think they're going to do better, you finish first. You get the bye. Second and third. And or if second, third, and fourth are better than second and third in the other division,
then you get
three teams. Yeah, you get the crossover. So that's the equalizer. The crossover is the equalizer. So, I mean, let's face it. When you only have eight teams, it's very possible, you know, to have teams that are dominating on one hand and teams that are dominated on the other. And those that are semi-dominated are the ones that make the playoffs.
I think a perfect example would be like, I don't know if you guys follow the MLS at all, but the MLS had the same thing where they used to have their playoffs be, even though they had East and West conferences, it was basically it didn't really matter. Any team could qualify for either side. It was just the top five teams or eight teams got in. But the problem with that is And this is what the commissioner for their league rightly said, is that it didn't help promote regional rivalries, which is a backbone for any successful league. And the reason that the situation in CFL is perfect is, even if the teams are mediocre, you still promote, you know, Toronto, Hamilton, Montreal, eventually Ottawa, whatever. You know, you want to have that regional rivalries to generate more interest and give more significance to regular season games. And, you know, that's vital. If you don't have strong rivalries in your league, that league will die in a heartbeat. I mean, the interest will wane. The regular season games will matter less and less. And eventually, you know, it'll all go to the side. Like, look at that Banjo Bowl. Look how great of a game that was, you know. Bombers had a terrible season. They had nothing really for the fans to root for, but just because it was a rivalry, look at the intensity. I mean, the crowd noise, it was unbelievable.
We just went over, but I'll forget that we went over. The live show is going on, ended, but this will go on, the people who go into the archive. You're right. And you know what? Some suggest also that teams like Saskatchewan make the season interesting in leagues as well. Everybody likes to have that team that everybody hates, you know, the super teams. So there's nothing wrong with that either. But, yeah, rivalry means everything in the sense that, you know, you learn to dislike other teams, and the fans know the players learn to dislike other teams. It's like when Toronto plays Ottawa now. And now this year they're talking about the kind of hate that's going to be on between Toronto and Boston, you know. So that's the kind of stuff that develops because they play all year. They knock each other around. Then they might even meet in the playoffs. First they're trying to knock each other out of the playoffs, and then they might even meet in the playoffs like the Leafs and Bruins did last year. And it does raise the bar on excitement, just as I'm sure the Islanders-Rangers does, you know, Rangers-New Jersey does, Philly-Pittsburgh does. You're right. The rivalries mean a lot.
So could I ask both of you a quick question then, and when it comes
sure.
to hockey? Okay, so both of you guys, I'm assuming, are both like Leafs fans, right?
Nope.
Yeah,
I am.
Not? Okay, so Aaron, you're a Leaf fan. Frank, who's
your team?
Doesn't
mean you got to root for the team.
Right. So, Frank, who's your team?
I don't have a team that I like the game. I like the game, but I just refuse to be the fan of a team until, especially the Leafs. I used to be as a kid. And they really disappointed me, and, you know, I was a big fan of Dave Keon, and Harold Ballard treated him like crap, and ever since then I haven't been a Leaf fan. And right now, you know, it's easier to be a Leaf fan if the team's competitive.
Right.
I just don't believe in supporting a loser.
Okay.
Let me put it that way to you.
Leads me into my question is just like, how do you guys see them doing this year? Are they going to get back to the playoffs, or are they going to get back to what they've been the last couple of years?
They're going to make the playoffs. In my opinion, they're going to make the playoffs.
Okay, so you didn't think last year was just a fact, like an aberration where, because of the shortened season, they just sort of lucked out and were able to get in? Because most people were saying had it been a full season, they probably would have slumped at some point and not made it at all.
Well, that would have been my take on it, Mike.
Yeah.
They didn't have a long enough season for them to actually fold like a cheap suit. you know, I mean, with a 48-game season, it's a little bit of a misrepresentation of the team's actual abilities because you're not playing the full 82-game schedule. There's not the opportunity for players to get banged up as much. There's not the opportunity for players to be as tired. There's not enough opportunities for the coach to lose the room. There's not enough opportunity for the fans to start to drift away from the team with a 48-game season, which, as far as I'm concerned, if I were the Leafs, I'd be pushing for that because it means
okay,
they perform better.
I disagree. Wholeheartedly, I disagree.
Will get back to the playoffs this year, however. I think they will, just because for some odd reason, they seem to love to prove the fans wrong.
Oh, you know where
I'm coming from on this one, Frank?
Kind of, I guess. I'm going to say yes because I'm going to be polite and say yes, but I don't. the fact remains, we had this conversation earlier before Mike was on. In my opinion, and this is important to me, if I feel that an organization actually wants to win and says it, that's one thing. But a team that wants to win and does things that prove they're willing to win, that's another story altogether. Look forward. If you want to know if the Leafs are for real, the question's going to come up with John Michael Lyles. If he does not come through for the Leafs, and he's in the minors, let's say a month and a half into the season, and he's not on the team,
Otter going to be blessed.
Yeah, and the point I'm trying to make is this: is that the Leafs for years have spoken about being a winner, but they haven't done the things that make a winner a winner. Okay. And that is long-term vision, okay? That
yep.
is sucking back your mistake and admitting you made a mistake and fix it instead of trying to make the mistake work out for you. And that's my take on it. I do believe that this is a Leaf management team, that if they feel they made a mistake with John Michael Lyles, he will not be with the team. He will not be with the team. And that, to me, is the proof that they want to win. Not that they don't want to look bad. There's a difference.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So
I think they're for real. They will make the playoffs, and they'll be very competitive. They'll be very, very competitive. They will be.
So who are the Leafs, like, who would you consider their main rival as far as getting people in Toronto really excited? Like, what would be the game, like, if you were to recommend me being from
Montreal. Montreal
in a heartbeat.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
Okay.
But you'll be paying about 20% more for those seats because it's a premium game.
Especially this year. They're doing the thing that they've done in football for years, the thing that they've done in U.S. cities with hockey.
Yeah.
They have different price ranges for tickets depending on what the team is that comes in.
And
like New York
more
in the
for
US.
An original 16 because they realize they can get more butts in the seat for that.
Wow.
In other words, they're trying to hug the line of selling out.
Yeah, so did Vancouver make the playoffs last year?
Yep. They were knocked off in the first round.
So Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver all made it, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, because Montreal not okay. So I guess Winnipeg, are they even close to being competitive, or are they still in that?
Yeah. And the division they're in, they got a good chance. In the West, there's one less team in each division.
Right.
That's one less team you have to beat.
So, Frank, would you start rooting for Winnipeg just because they're the newest Canadian team, just out of, if you don't really root for the Leafs anymore?
I do root for them. They're one of the teams I like.
I would root for them just because they got a kick-ass logo.
and also because I got a hate on for one of their best players.
Now, who's that?
You don't know? You can't figure it out?
No, I couldn't even name a player on the team if you paid me $1 million.
Okay. Well, let's see if I'm gonna play with Aaron here. We're gonna play a game with Aaron now. Okay? Then the game's called Figure Out the Player I'm Talking About. Wad of Cash Telephone.
What?
Wad of Cash Telephone.
Oh, good God. Wad of Cash Telephone?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Las Vegas. Las Vegas.
Are you talking about the dude that got rolled?
No, you didn't get rolled. You really don't know who I'm talking about?
No, I don't know who you're talking about, bro.
Holy crap. I can't believe you don't know who I'm talking about. Really? Really?
Yeah.
Really?
You're not talking about Buffer.
No, not Mr. Buff Lynn. He has the same name as the best player on Chicago.
Really? You're not a fan of Evander?
Nope.
Wow. Okay, of anybody you could have picked on that team, I wouldn't have picked him.
He's a jerk.
Gee, I mean, I would have gone after Andrew Ladd, I could see.
No, that's he's a jerk. Vander Kane is a jerk.
All right.
He's a spoiled
I've never
brat.
Met, can't make that judgment, but I'll trust your judgment on that one.
Well, okay. I don't know if you can. Can you Google Evander Kane Vegas?
Yeah, let me do that right now.
Try it.
Wow.
Did you get it?
Yeah. Oh, you know what, dude? That's funny. That is actually funny, though.
Explain to Mike what you're looking at.
All right. It's a picture of Evander Kane from the Winnipeg Jets.
Uh-huh.
Using stacks of $100 bills to pretend he's making a phone call to Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He's got a stack of hundreds at his ear, and he's pretending he's making a phone call.
Wow.
This kid has done some really stupid shit on Twitter and elsewhere. And that was a picture he posted on Twitter.
Dude, seriously, though? I think that's hilarious.
I knew you'd think it was hilarious.
Oh, come on. Wads of hundies. Call out Floyd Mayweather. They're going, bro, pick up your phone because I'm calling. Everybody. I'm sorry. I wish I'd seen this sooner because that's hilarious.
Well, you see, you learned stuff because of me, too.
Definitely.
Yeah,
oh,
Evander Kane. Evander Kane is a very talented speedster, and he just—I don't know—he just to me is an example of why you know, sometimes some kids make too much money.
Now, you guys know how it is in the world, right? If you have enough talent, people will look over basically anything if you got the talent, you know.
And well, he had
Winnipeg, right?
He had problems, Mike, coming back to Winnipeg this year. He was going to get arrested. He hadn't paid $650 in unpaid traffic tickets.
What? Wow.
Yeah.
And the team paid the tickets. He's supposed to be paying them back.
Oh, that's just enabling this stuff. This guy's gonna just keep getting worse and worse every year. Oh man. But I guess, you know, when you're a bad team, you don't have a lot of talent, you have to put up with guys like this just to have, you know, a talented roster, right?
Well, what about RG3?
What do you mean?
He's got some ego problems.
Oh, come on. RG3, really?
He's willing to play.
I don't know enough about RG3 to chime in, so.
No, I'm just going to say this.
Yeah.
RG3 was hurt in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
And he didn't come out when he was hurt. And the team went from, he stayed out there longer than he should have.
Mm-hmm.
And the team ended up losing, and that was it. End of playoffs for them.
Okay.
But he's a talented player. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah,
and, but,
I mean,
you know what?
The character of the guy is, you know, it's great. I mean, the guy's like...
A fighter?
Not just a fighter, but overall, his overall demeanor, like... I mean, okay, I'll just say it like this. For me personally, like, as a black person, like, it's good to see a quarterback that understands that when you're in that position, you have to live up to a standard that's even higher than your peers. Because of your ethnicity, people are going to have a certain expectation of you, your behavior, how you're going to carry yourself. And the guy...
Wait a minute, Mike. You're black?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Ah. Oh, well.
I'm not black in the sense like an African-American. I'm actually African directly. I just grew up here, but...
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, but... No,
honestly,
so I
had no idea.
Yeah, and I know if people over the, when they hear just my voice, they assume something else. But I guess that's how it is. But
I thought he was Italian.
That's funny. But
it's okay.
No, but
Franco Harris was Italian, half.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a kind of a touchy subject. Anyways, but. What I meant to say was just like, as a black quarterback, you know how the stigma is, as, you know, on blacks, that number one, they're not smart enough to play the position. You know, the old
that's all gone, buddy. That's Mike. That's old news.
Yeah,
that's old
but
news.
I'm just saying,
right
now,
75% of the quarterbacks in the NFL are black.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, it's all about your demeanor too. Like Michael Vick, he had his issues. Even Cam Newton still has that, you know, that bravado, that sort of, you know. But when you see RG3, the guy's got, grew up with two military parents. He's a humble, hardworking guy. He understands how to present himself to the general public, how to handle things. Like, he gets it. And to me, he's an example of the older generations of African Americans who understood that it's not enough just to show up to the job. You have to go in there and you have to be on an even higher level just to prove that you're worthy of being there. You know, it's not just show up and just whatever. And I can tell because of it being, you know, raised by his two parents and coming from that background, he understood that. A lot of these other African-American athletes, they don't get that because they still have that entitlement mentality that plagues a lot of the black community here in America, especially coming from the poor neighborhoods, that, you know, the world owes them something or you're entitled to it. And that, you know, to me, it's refreshing to see a young African-American athlete who understands that that's not how the world operates. And you have to prove yourself, and you have to work hard through discipline, through determination. And so I like, that's why I like that. I'm a huge fan of the guy because I can tell he understands that. So I know that's totally off topic, but I just want to throw that out.
No. Hey, listen, no, you know what? If that's the way you see him, that's great. I read an article about him, and that's where I'm getting my tood from, is the article I read. And it was a black writer, you know, so
right.
I just want to make that clear. Since we're having a topic here and we're discussing it from a black man's eyes, right? The black experience, if you will.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
I'm not talking about you, Mike. I'm talking about
the
quarterback.
No.
I'm talking about the quarterback,
right.
And I'm talking about the reporter's black because, you know, because the reporter was black, he was very negative, and he felt RG3 was a very selfish player not coming out in the playoffs. And then he's concerned about, he doesn't think that people should be talking about the backup quarterback because he's the quarterback. And he's telling the coach to stop saying things like, you know, like, for example, the coach said recently, he said, I don't mind if blah, blah, blah ends up being the starting quarterback. RG3 was offended by that remark. Now, does he have a right to be offended?
Think about it. Like, the Redskins were a joke for the last, I don't even know, like a decade. Right, he's the first legitimate franchise quarterback they've ever had. Secondly, he carried that team to the playoffs.
Since Joe Theismann, since the ex-Argo
Joe Theismann was in a franchise. All he's known for is he got his leg snapped in half, which is sad, but that's basically what people know him for.
It was great TV. It was great TV.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah, you're right. No, I get what you're saying. I mean, Mike, you do realize that for one person will interpret someone's aggressiveness as something negative, while another will see it as something good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It depends which way you look at it, right? I see from your perspective, absolutely, you're 100% right. You're 100% right. And whether he was black, orange, or purple, if he thinks that mentioning the other quarterbacks that he's competing with, or I guess, you know what I mean? If that's a problem for him, that is an ego problem. That is something that's not very team-oriented. But having said all that, what really matters is how the guy plays. Because you know what? I'm not much for the personality of players. I'm for how they produce. That's all that matters to me. So it's like work, right? I don't care what color, what, as long as they do their job and don't affect anybody else adversely. Do you know what I mean? And that's the key thing right there. Don't affect the other guys adversely. Now, will he be a distraction because of what's going on? We'll find out later. Not today, but we'll find out later down the season.
Like, it kind of messes with it. Like, okay, I grew up a huge Viking fan, and I remember when Randy Moss came into the league, I was like, you know, 12, 13 years old at the time, and I thought, you know, I was a huge fan of his, right? And then we got to go to this, they had this program with my school. We got to go to the Vikings practice facility and meet the players. And I just remember he was the biggest a-hole I ever ran into. He was a total douchebag, man.
Exactly.
And like, from that moment on, I could never cheer for him because it always stuck in my mind. Like, I get it, you may be not feeling like coming out, but come on, man. You got a bunch of, you know, little kids here who are just excited to see you. The least you could have done was, you know what I'm saying,
treat him nicely. Like, he was the biggest, if he was talking, he was like cussing people off and get away from me and all this.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I think Mark Twain
horrible.
Said it best. People should never meet their heroes.
Oh, I really, seriously, that was a total buzzkill for me. I was just like, oh, my God. Because you remember, like, in, you know, when Moss
yeah.
was coming out,
but
the
that,
first
but,
couple
but
of
what,
years, he was huge.
But, Mike, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Like, as long as it doesn't affect everybody else, who
mm-hmm.
cares? You know what I mean? Like, who cares? Like, it, to me, every sport is a team sport. There isn't a sport that's a team that isn't a team sport. Even an individual sport like golf is a team sport. He's got
right.
a caddy, needs a caddy. He's got a coach that, you know, he's got a swing coach, a putting coach, frig, an exercise coach, you know, there is no such thing as an individual in sport anymore. And, you know, how they treat the people around them, you
yeah.
know, is basically important. It is truly important. And mm-hmm. and when I make a decision on somebody, like I said, Evander Kane, I'm saying that Evander Kane, when push comes to shove, he's
yep.
probably going to be a dimwit because he doesn't have the intelligence to realize that, you know, 90% of the people who are paying tickets to go to the Winnipeg Jets hockey game would really be hurt by him. He's just flaunting money. To them, he's flaunting money. And to
yeah.
me, that's not a good – that's not being smart, you know, not being smart. It's like writing on the other team's chalkboard, you guys suck. Just don't do it. You're asking for trouble. You know, don't give people a reason to be motivated against you.
Hey, Mike, I got a quick question for you.
Yeah.
You said you were a Vikes fan, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. What did you think of their decision to cut Chris Cluey?
Oh, the punter?
Yeah.
Oh, that was actually – the thing about that is that had more to do with off-the-field stuff than his actual on-the-field performance.
So do you think
just,
it had more to do with the fact that he was an outspoken advocate for gay rights and gay marriage and what have you?
Oh,
as a,
absolutely.
To his actual performance?
Yeah, that played a huge part. Because it generated a lot of, you know, first off, because, you know, I'm sure you guys heard of Paul Allen, their play-by-play guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a show
yep.
here, and he really went into detail about a lot of the friction and tension in the locker room that caused and how guys, you know, didn't want him around. And, you know, punters are pretty much expendable, to be honest with you, when it comes to football, right? You can be replaced. And once he did that and caused all that strife in the locker room and among the media and some of the, you know, season ticket holders expressed their issue with some of the things he said, and one thing led to another, and that's it, you know. Because, you know, Minnesota, to a degree, while we do have a lot of support for, you know, liberal politics, on those type of issues, we're still more of a conservative state. So I just think that, you know,
That was a nice segue, Aaron.
Thank you.
Because that's
well, just,
exactly
it,
what we're
I,
that's
I happen
exactly
to follow
we
him on Twitter. He's pretty hilarious, especially on Twitter. I haven't bought his book yet, but I'm thinking of picking it up. But I just wanted to get your take on it. I mean, obviously, as a Vikes fan, you've got a stake in the team. I just wanted to get your take on what you felt and what you thought about his being released. So
yeah, I mean,
I
just wanted to add, too, like, I don't know where you guys are in this, but I'm totally against gay marriage. Like, I mean, firstly, as a Christian, but secondly, just for what it's doing to America. Like, I don't know what the situation in Canada is, but what I see being done in America, especially in the public schools, is this concept of going from trying to say, you know, tolerating people's different lifestyles, which I get, which we all should advocate for, but trying to push it to this next level where it's now we have to accept it as okay and that it's no longer a bad thing. And that's the thing, that's the wave that's being pushed on, especially on the younger generations, to try to, like, indoctrinate them into thinking that not only is homosexuality an alternate lifestyle, but that it's an acceptable thing and that there's nothing wrong with it. You know what I'm saying? And all the moral and ethic lines that this country was founded on have been blurred to the point where it's like people are calling what used to be evil good and what's good evil.
But I mean, now, Mike, I think that's you're oversimplifying the whole subject. First of all, I disagree with you, and I'm a Christian, but I'm not a Bible thumping Christian. Actually, if you were listening to the program, I clarified with Aaron where I stand on religion. I think Aaron, you know what I mean, right?
Yes, sir.
And okay, so I don't carry my crucifix and wave it in front of me, but I can't believe that as a Christian you can't use Christianity to say that you shouldn't anyway. As far as I'm concerned, because the guy that Christianity is based on is Jesus Christ. He accepted everyone. He accepted all sinners. And he loved everyone. And he died on the cross for everyone. And as far as homosexuality is concerned, whether you want to call it a lifestyle or a choice or something they're born into, it's their life. And as long as they're not hurting anybody, it's none of my business. That's the way I look at it, Mike. So I don't agree with you as far as that's concerned. What here in Toronto, the problem we have, and Aaron will help me out on this because he's always way ahead of everything above me. what we had here that I didn't like, along the lines of what you're saying. I'm trying to tell you that I'm all for gay rights and everybody that they have the same rights that I do. But what bothered me was, do you remember Aaron? They were putting out a book about gay people and gay marriages and gay children, and then they were using it in public school. Suggesting, and in the book it suggested, that homosexuals make better parents. That really offended me.
Right.
Mike, we've had gay marriage in Canada for over 10 years. Dogs and cats aren't living together. The government hasn't been consumed by a lake of fire. None of these horrible, horrible predictions have come to pass. The fact of the matter is the United States Bill of Rights clearly states that every man is created equal.
Yeah, but
I'm of the opinion you're going to love who you're going to love. I don't think it should be the government's job to tell me who I can and cannot love.
Okay, well, think about
what I mean?
And let me just throw something out to you, because you just quoted the Bill of Rights, right? And when you said that, you said that all men are created equal and are endowed by rights, but by whom? By their creator.
Exactly did Jesus say about homosexuality?
Okay, well that's very easy.
No, I'm not talking about the Pentateuch.
Okay. No, yeah,
I'm talking about any of the clobber passages that you want to bring up from Leviticus, Mike.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna quote the Old Testament at all. And this is actually gonna address Frank's point earlier too that he made about Jesus.
And now understand I have Google open right now, so if you're gonna quote scripture at me, I'm gonna look it up.
I want to
see for myself.
Yeah,
all right?
Go ahead. This is called appropriate hermeneutics and understanding a text and context. But Frank brought up the same point where he decided to say, like, Jesus accepted everybody.
Yeah.
Now, as a Christian, we're called to accept all people, regardless of what they've done in the past. But nowhere did Jesus ever said to anyone or address anyone to stay where they are. And the perfect example of this is the woman caught in adultery, right? The Pharisees bring this woman caught in adultery, and they accuse her, and Jesus obviously, has them all leave by saying the first one who, whoever committed sin, throw the first stone. But what you notice is once everyone's gone, and it's just Jesus and the woman, what he says to her is a very interesting statement. He says to her, "Where are your accusers?" And she said, "There's none." And he says, "I don't accuse you either." But then what he says to her after that is, "Now go and sin no more." And that's a very key point. This is addressed what Frank said.
Okay.
Jesus
so
accepts
where
all sinners regardless of where they're coming from, but he does not accept them to stay in the sin. The point is they're forgiven with the understanding that now you're given a new life, turn to God so that you can turn away from it, not stay in it.
So
it's love the homosexual, not homosexuality. See, there's a line there, and that line gets blurred by it. That's the whole issue. It's we love and accept the actual sinner. We're not called to love and accept the sin. That's the key point here. That's what I'm trying to come across with.
Okay.
All right,
do you believe that we're born that way, or do you believe it's a choice?
Well, that's, again, that's a slippery subject because there's
I'm asking you personally, Mike.
Okay.
I'm not asking what you think of the Bible's interpretation. I'm not asking what book, what chapter, what verse. I'm asking you. Do you think it's a choice, or do you think we're born that way?
Okay, that's what I'm trying to – I'm not talking about the Bible. We're talking about from just scientific evidence is – it shows that there's evidence on both sides. There's evidence pointing towards potentially that it's a genetical thing. There's evidence saying the otherwise to it. So it's both sides. So it's not a it's not a clear-cut thing based on the information available to make a decision either way on that. The most
likely thing,
for me, what sways me is obviously what God said above that. But the scientific evidence just sort of leaves you in limbo either way, so it comes down to your personal bias at the end of the day.
So with your personal bias, do you believe it's a choice or do you believe you're born that way?
It could be either. I mean, I've obviously have met a lot of homosexual people. I have friends who were that. They mm-hmm. Some of them claim that they were born that way. Some of them have told me this is something that they just, you know, chose to do, and they feel like they have the ability to turn away from it if they want to. So,
okay.
You know, I can't make a definitive statement on that either way.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that.
Right.
But and again, you see, here's the thing. A lot of people say, oh well, God says you shouldn't in the Bible. But,
yeah, but
when I ask for chapter and verse, I never
get. Oh, okay. Well, I'll get
a
chapter.
I get all this wibbly wobbly wonderful.
Okay.
But I'll go to sin no more, and thou
right.
shalt not this. But
okay,
no,
I'll give you a very clear cut one. Go to Acts chapter 15.
You won't bugger somebody up the butt.
Yeah, but just go to Acts chapter 15, right? In
I'm
Acts
sorry,
chapter
what, 15, where is that?
The book of Acts, chapter 15.
The book
gonna,
of Acts.
Yeah, the book
is it
of
Old
Acts
Testament
of the Apostles.
Or New Testament?
This is
New
Testament.
Old or new? Oh, okay.
New Testament. This is Acts of the Apostles, chapter 15. In there,
okay,
you have
book Acts or book 10?
No. Book. Okay. The it's called the Acts of the Apostles. This is right after. This
the
is right
Acts.
After John.
Acts.
Acts. Yeah. Sorry.
Acts book 10.
No. Chapter 15.
Acts, chapter 15. Okay.
Yeah. Now in that chapter, you have the two divisions in the early church, right? You have the Jewish believers who are putting pressure on Paul to say that these new Christians coming in, these new Gentile Christians, they need to get circumcised and follow the Torah, right? So Paul's saying to them, no, that's not necessary. That's a stumbling block that's going to keep people from coming to Christ. So they have this meeting with Jesus' brother James. And in that meeting, they're discussing this issue, do Gentiles need to observe the law of Moses? In there, James gets up and makes a decision before all the other apostles, and he makes a statement. And he tells them that the Gentiles don't need to follow the entire Torah, nor do they need to be circumcised, but they're expected to still follow four rules. And what are they? They are, do not consume blood. I'm sorry, do not consume blood. Do not eat meat of a strangled animal. One of them, I forgot one. Then the last one addresses our point, is refrain from sexual immorality. So what he's saying there is, from the Mosaic Law, there's only four key points that apply to Gentiles. Notice that sexual immorality still applies. And there's certain sexual laws in the Torah that we all accept as common sense, like do not have sex with your family members, do not have sex with animals. These are laws in the Torah that I don't see anyone disputing because we all accept this as true.
So
and these all apply in the, yeah, Acts chapter 15, read it. That's
okay.
Where.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Acts 15, 29, that you abstain
right.
from meat offered to idols and from
right.
blood and from things strangled and from fornication.
Right.
From which if you keep to yourselves, you shall do well.
Yep.
So basically that sounds to me like it's a don't ask, don't tell kind of thing.
No. What he's trying to say is like that. This is a concept of what part of the actual law of Moses do Gentile, non-Jewish believers in Christ are expected to do? And he's saying just follow these four key rules right here.
Okay.
The
definition of fornication as set down by the New King James Version,
right,
and by the King James Version of Acts links directly back to Leviticus 21:9, 1929, Deuteronomy 22. And Exodus 22.
Okay.
Specifically with reference to adultery.
Right.
It's also used more frequently in a symbolical rather than ordinary sense. It means the forsaking of God following after idols.
Yeah, but in this sense, we understand it means a sexual connotation.
Okay. Well, in that case, again, it links directly back to adultery.
Right.
And it is
Isaiah 1,
Jericho 2:20, Ezekiel 16, Hosea 1:2, and Hosea 2:1, and Jeremiah 3:8 and 3:9. Right. No mention is made of homosexuality. Nor is homosexuality made mention of in Leviticus 21:9, 19:29, Deuteronomy 22:20,
22:21, 22:23. Okay. Can I try to catch up now? I promise not to interrupt too long. So, in other words, homosexuality isn't immoral, is what you're saying.
According to the literal interpretation and the acts that Mike has directed me to here, I can't find anything that says homosexuality.
So where does it say, Mike, that homosexuality is immoral?
Okay, well, in the when he brings up the Old Testament, I can't tell you the chapter.
They're no longer bound. Anybody who still follows the laws of the Pentateuch and the laws of Leviticus and Deuteronomy are under.
Yeah, but when we come to talking about this is very easy to address. I mean, this is part of it. Just takes simple common sense. When God addresses homosexuality as an abomination before the eyes of the Lord, right? And that Paul later on, if we get to Romans, this is the thing. If you want to talk about how Paul addressed homosexuality, go to the book of Romans.
Let's go to Romans and look that up then. What chapter are we looking at in Romans then?
Okay, let me get the exact chapter and verse. But he talks about homosexuality. We're going to address it because it's part of it. It's a little bit of common sense when it comes to, like, how Jesus would view it, how God addressed it. And it's all about consistency.
But that's where the problem is.
Jesus claims to be the Son of God. He's not going to have – his views are not going to defer what his Father already stated. Secondly, the Scripture also says God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So if God makes a statement, whether it be to Moses, whether it be to after the time of Jesus, that homosexuality is an abomination to him, right, and that it's considered an unnatural affection, okay, how in the world are we going to sit here and think that Jesus, who is supposed to be his son and is supposed to be connected with him, is going to have a different view on the issue? I mean, let's be honest, guys. I mean, that's basic. I mean, that's just common sense. I mean, we don't even, you know, that's not even, to me, it's not even discussed. It's just that we're being twisted by the secular non-Christian community to accept what society is pressuring us to say is the norm. And as Christians, I'm seeing so many Christians are just caving into what the world says. And remember what Jesus said. He said, the world will hate you because they hate me. And they don't hate me because of my good works. They hate me because I testify to their wickedness. The reason the world hates Jesus is not because of what he did or what he, you know, because he preached love. He treated people with love and dignity and respect to everyone. But they hate him because he testified to their wickedness. Because what they enjoy, they know that God said is evil. That's why they hate him. And that's why he said, if you're a true follower of me and you stand for what I say, the world will hate you too. Because of that reason. That's something you guys got to take hold of. So any true Christian, if you find yourself always capitulating to the world and what the world's trying to say, no, that's not a bad thing, don't say that, you got to question, where's your allegiance? And if your allegiance is to Christ, you have to know that there's going to come a point where the world is going to hate you for the same reason that he said it hated him. So you got to make a stand at some point. Who are you with? Are you with the world or are you with Christ? And to me, I'm sorry. Even if people hate you or hate me, that's fine, because my allegiance and my everything of who I am is dedicated to him first and foremost. So wherever he stands, that's where I'm going to stand. So, Frank, I understand you're a Catholic, and the Catholics as a whole, let's be honest, it starts with the Pope first and foremost, have been bending over backwards to make the world look at them and accept them, and, you know, whether it be through saying all roads lead to God or saying that Allah is the same God of the Bible, and I'm sure at some point they're going to say homosexuality is okay. It's coming down the road.
He just did.
I mean,
the Pope already did.
Yeah, so that's crazy. I mean, how can you do that?
No, I get what you're saying, and there's no argument in what you're saying, but here's what I'm going to say to you. I don't think Jesus is any different than any other son. He didn't see eye to eye with his father. He was confused at the rock, and he didn't understand why he was being asked to do something. Now, I'm not saying
Frank,
he didn't capitulate. He didn't capitulate, but he did question what the father said and what the father expected.
Yeah, because he didn't want to go through. I mean, no sane person is going to want to go through that type of brutal suffering. I mean, everybody's going to have trepidation. He was still dealing with the things that we deal with as men. Pain, suffering, hunger, loneliness, sadness. He went through all of that. So he saw what he was going to deal with. But what did Paul say? Even though he knew it was coming, he endured it for the joy he knew that was set before him. And that's a message that we as Christians are supposed to accept, that yes, we're going to go through tribulation. Yes, people may hate us for what we claim to believe, or we might go through hardship because of the devil, but we have to keep our eyes on the end goal, at the prize at the end. And Paul used the example that Jesus, knowing the joy that was set before him, if he accomplished this and how many people he would save and the glory that he would receive for that, endured the shame, the hardship that he had to go through to get to that. So, you know, that's just Jesus revealing his humanity at the time. I mean, think about that, Frank. Even if you had to die for your kid, let's say your kids were in a situation that you had to risk your life and go through a whole lot to save them. Think about that, Frank, as a parent. And you knew what you had to go through. Even though you love your children so much, you're still going to have a little bit of hesitation knowing what you're about to experience. You know?
No, I get that. That's not my thing. But my thing is, I guess, there are some inconsistencies that are preached, you know. And in my mind, I don't know. I just don't see what is written as what has happened. That's where I may not hold the Bible in as much as steadfastly the truth, the word. I don't think the Bible is the word. I think Jesus is the word. And I think the people that wrote about Jesus wrote in their own perception and in their own time, in their own thinking. I happen to think that Jesus is progressive. And I do believe that I know what you're saying about, you know, about sin and stuff like that. But unfortunately, I'm one of those Christians that figures when the sin happens, it's between that person and God, and God will take care of it when the time is right. If it's, you know, the pearly gates will be there, and it's not my job to judge. Don't judge. I just don't believe in judging. You can do it, Mike. I don't hold any animosity to you for doing it. But I don't judge people that way. That's not the way. I'm just not into it.
Judging it, Frank. It's just about understanding as a society that.
Well,
what
you're
is right
interpreting.
And what is wrong.
Exactly. You're interpreting law. You're creating law, an interpretation of law, and you're acting on that interpretation.
Okay.
I have difficulty doing that. I have difficulty casting the first stone. But
it's not about casting a stone. We're not like accusing people or saying to something directly.
Well, you're
but
telling them to stop doing
the
it.
The issue is,
you're telling them to stop.
What I'm saying is, the flip side is here in America. What's being done is, it's going a step further beyond of saying, okay, we have to tolerate it too. Now we have to all learn to accept it as okay. That's what it's going to, and that's the part where, as a Christian, now you're, you know, that's when it's obvious. You got to make your, you know, stand.
Well,
on
I get,
what
I
draw.
No, yeah, I understand what you're
you know?
Saying because
I mean, this is a clear.
Well, I don't have a problem with homosexuals in almost any way, and I say almost. I qualify it for my own reasons. Like I said, I sort of agree with what you're saying. Is I'm not here to promote any kind of sexuality. That's not my job. And nobody should be doing that either. You know, not only is it not my job, it's not your job either, if you know what I mean. But then again,
right.
You know, that's I agree with you on that score. And I expressed an example of how that happened here and how I disagree with it. You know, you can't be a homosexual and say homosexual parents are better than, you know, because now you're basically saying that heterosexual parents are no good, and now you're doing what you're supposed to be trying to, you know, work your way away from.
Right.
So, but that's the real sin. That's the real sin, the hypocrisy of people who should you know reap what they sow and say what they mean and do what they, you know. We're all sinners. Everybody's a sinner. We all
right.
have our sin. And all you're trying to say, and I respect what you're trying to say, is that realize it's a sin. I accept that you, like, you know, like you said, you know, don't hate the sinner, hate the sin.
Right, and if I could just add, when it comes to homosexuality, let's just, I want to be clear on one thing. There's absolutely no difference between a homosexual and a heterosexual who's having sex out of marriage. It's the exact same thing. There's no, it's not worse to any degree. It's exact. It's no different than a heterosexual committing sin himself. It's the same thing, and we all struggle with that. You know, like the Bible says
to me, as a man, I'm supposed to be married
to one woman, and yet I have natural urges that want me to have sex with as many beautiful women as possible, right? And that's
a battle I got to deal with.
Yeah.
How do homosexuals feel when? How do you think a homosexual feels when you tell him? When he's in the act of love, and his love is with one partner, and that's his partner, just like the kind of heterosexual relationships we aspire to, and you tell him that's a sin, how do you think he feels?
I mean, Frank, I mean, come on. Like you said, we're all sinners. We all have issues that we all deal with. We all have, a lot of us have secret sins that we struggle with.
Whatever it may be.
But at some point, as we have to be honest with ourselves, and they know it. I mean, I don't have to say anything. Paul makes it clear that those doing it, they know themselves. The reason that they've got to the point they're at is that their conscience has been seared to the point where it's no longer even, there's no longer the guilt or that alarm clock going off saying what you're doing is wrong. And this happens to all of us. This is not just on them.
They don't think what they're doing is wrong.
Yeah, because, Frank, all of us do. We all justify and rationalize in our own minds the things that we know innately to be wrong as something that's actually okay. And over time, the more and more you do that, you weaken your conscience to the point where there's no more of that guilt or shame that what you're doing is wrong, to the point where it's become totally acceptable to yourself.
Again,
and that's what the Bible describes as hardening one's heart. That's what the whole concept is. I get you, Mike.
Yeah. Mike, when I sit in church beside some people, and I see the hypocrisy that they set forth, if you will, you know, I don't go to them and say, you know, you're a hypocrite. You're here in church, and then you're ripping people off when you with what you do, and you don't seem to care. That's not my job. In my opinion, that's not my job. My job is not to. See, that's the, I'm totally against proselytizing. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying I am not the judge. That God is the only being that can judge us. So when I start judging people, you can say what you believe, right, Mike? I'm going to respect what you're saying, and I will give it serious thought. But that's up to me as the individual who's listening to you. I can't tell other people, yeah, Mike's right, you got to do what he says, because that's not in my makeup. That's not the way I work. That doesn't mean I don't believe in certain things. It just means I don't believe that I have the right to judge people. That's all. I just don't have the right, in my opinion.
Of course. I mean, when it comes to the judging, like, you got to frame what you're saying, Frank. We're not sitting here in condemnation of people. I mean, that's God's role to do, is to decide on the individual. But as a people, we understand there's a standard. Now, when we try to come in and say, no, God's standard isn't quite right, we need to adjust it to what we want, that's a whole other issue. When Christians walk around and start saying things like, oh, Jesus isn't against homosexuality, that takes another level. When people go from it's my personal take to, no, no, Christ accepts it, now we're dragging him down. You understand? Now we're putting things in his mouth.
It's one thing if you and I
have our preferences, but
flip side to that, Mike. As soon as you start to say it's common sense, that taints the entire argument.
Well, I mean, it just goes to say,
you
got to
look at laws, but you know, it says one thing, but common sense dictates this, and this goes for any argument.
Right.
If you sit there and say, oh well, common sense says this, your definition of common sense and somebody else's definition of common sense are two shades of gray.
Okay, so Aaron, do you believe that there's a God at all?
I believe in gods, plural, yes.
Okay, so I'm assuming then you believe that all morality and ethics is subjective, right?
When you say subjective, you mean as in it all depends
your
on
your opinion.
Point.
Yeah, what I mean by that is there's no, in your worldview, there's no such thing as objective morals, the things that are absolutely wrong, no, regardless of what anyone's preference
no,
may
be. I have morals. I believe in object morals.
Okay, so do you understand that what I mean by that is, like, say, for example, you take Nazi Germany and you take our culture, right?
Yeah.
In our culture, killing Jews would be considered wrong, but in the
yeah.
Nazi culture, it would be considered right because they're improving the human gene pool in their view, right?
Well,
and someone with a subjective worldview could say, well, what's right is right for them and what's right is right for us. Is that do you
adhere
to that?
Well, according
to
the National Socialists, which is a subsegment of German culture, yes, it would have been correct.
Okay, so
I don't believe that all Germans felt that way. If all Germans felt that way, you wouldn't have had people like Hitler.
Well, we're just talking about a worldview contrast. So do you adhere to the idea that... Can you say that you have a ground to object to that, or is it something that because that's their preference or bias, you have to accept that because you have a – you understand what I'm just trying to get an understanding?
Yeah,
on a grand
Aaron,
scale, there are
Aaron.
Certain things that we can agree are right, and there are certain things that we can agree are wrong. The systematic extermination of any peoples is,
right.
Everybody can agree, wrong.
Bad things happen because good people let them happen,
yeah.
And we all pick our own fights. We all pick our own fights. That's being human. That's being human. We all consider what we consider important to fight for. We don't all agree on everything.
Okay, so I just want to make this a clear establishment. There is no God prior to the human mind that establishes a moral standard of what's right and wrong. Then there is no such thing as objective morals. Everything then becomes totally subjective. You know what I'm saying? Like
Of course.
Right.
In the absence of another, in the absence of another group, we make all the decisions.
Right.
Or
so
person.
That's the fundamental issue that, as a country in America, we have to decide. And
the secularists are
pressuring us into that worldview. And the more and more you look around, the thing that most secularists don't understand, this is what blows me away by atheists, is that their worldview is almost identical to that of a Satanist. You talk to any Satanist and ask them, what is your outlook, what is your worldview breakdown, what is your views on moral and ethics? It's all about, do as thou wills or whatever you desire. And what's right is right for you and what's right is right for me. And what that's what's being pressured onto our...
I get the picture you're painting. You're saying all things good come from our willingness to be submissive. And you can't be submissive to yourself because that just doesn't work.
No, that's not what... Frank, that's not even close. Whoa, I don't even know where you got that from.
That's not what I meant at all. Well, if there's no God, then we only do what we think is right. Then we are the rule makers. If there's no God, right?
And that's
So what do rule makers do? They ask us to submit to their rules.
Right.
Doesn't that make us submissive? And that's exactly. I'm just saying, submit to the laws that Christ and God want you to is what you're saying. Let's face it. And unfortunately, people and I'm one of them probably my biggest problem is being submissive. That's probably my biggest problem. And that's the problem you have with your way of thinking and the way society works, because we're all very selfish nowadays. We're all very selfish. I'm not considering myself a wonderful person. I'm trying to tell you what's wrong with me. And I understand what you're saying. It's just hard for me to be submissive. And I don't think I'm much different than many other people. Aaron can pipe in at this point if you understand what I'm saying, Aaron.
I think I do, Frank.
But I'm referring to it as on a bigger scale as a nation, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, Frank, what you're saying. We all struggle with that, but the point is, America is a Christian nation that has been blessed by God for a reason. America did not reach this status in the world based on our own ingenuity. It's one and by one, and the scripture says all the nations that are blessed are nations that make their God the Lord. And you look around the world right now, who are the premium nations? Who are at the top? It's all countries who, whether it be in the past or whether it be still to today, their God is still Jesus, and that has not changed. And America got the blessings it did because of, number one, how they treated the poor, the compassion that's within this country, how they were the number one producers of missionaries, evangelism, spreading the word, just being a nation that was a light to others. That's what this country was founded on, a shelter for those who were escaping tyranny or oppression, whatever lands they were coming from. Even if they didn't believe in the same God as we did, we still open our borders to people to come in as a refuge. This was a city on a hill. Anyone who studies American history, you can clearly see that. And it's not, it doesn't take, you know, a history buff to understand that this country was blessed for a reason. And now, in the last 20 years, it's drastically shifted its whole worldview to now shaking its fist in God's face more and more. And this is a repeat of what happened to the nation of Israel. And if you read Isaiah chapter 9, verse 10, when God starts warning the people and saying to Israel, you guys keep turning away from me. What does Israel say when God sends a first wave of judgment and warning by allowing a strike on the nation? They say to God that we're going to rebuild, and in the places of, you know, the bricks, we're going to put hewn stone. In the place of the sycamores, we're going to put pine trees in their place, stating to God that whatever you cut down from us, we're going to rebuild and come back stronger. And that's the message you see now. And this defiance that America has in God's face is only going to lead to its own destruction. And the decline is happening all around us. You can see it. In the last 10 to 15 years, the decline this nation is starting to hit on is unbelievable. And we're now saying and doing things that in the 1980s would have been unheard of, to think that the stuff that's on TV, the way God and Jesus are mocked, the stuff that's on, forget late night TV, that's on regular prime time. I mean, no one can sit there and say, oh, that's not evidence. It's obvious, man. I mean, look around. Look how things are getting darker, not brighter. I mean, if you can't see that, I don't know what to say, man. That's like, and to think God's just going to be silent and let all this keep going on, and that a country that was blessed by him can continue to defy him and just stick a middle finger to his face the way they've been doing. And this is going to keep up. I mean, come on.
Well, we've gone an hour over, Aaron.
Holy smokes, have we gone that far over?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that.
I got 12:57, man.
Holy smokes.
See what Mike did?
Yeah, it's all Mike's fault. We'll blame him.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. Blame him. Who else are we going to blame?
Yeah.
Who else are we going to blame?
Understand something, Mike. Understand something. No matter what I may say to you, I will never hate you. Not hate you.
I may kill you, but I won't hate you.
It's not in my system of faith or my system of belief to hate you.
Yeah, and I agree with that theory 100%.
So while we may trade barbs here, and I may question you and I may question the scripture, it is really because I do want to know more. It's not out of any desire to mock you. It's not out of any desire to hit you with a gotcha question. It is really out of a desire to learn more. Because while I did go to Bible school, there appear to be chunks of my knowledge that are missing. So if I press you for chapters and verses, it's because I do really want to know. It's not out of any desire to make you look bad or to denigrate your faith or anything like that. It is really in a search for knowledge.
Oh, absolutely. No, I welcome that. I understand. You know, I've really had this discussion with different people, and you can tell pretty quickly what someone's motives are, you know, off the top. But, you know, my hope is for any of the listeners or someone who, you know, people who download this later, that just this discussion can stir their curiosity to look into it, because more and more people are going to have to make a decision on what side they stand on. And there's just a lot of stuff out there to keep people from seeing the pure gospel message for what it is, which is Christ dying for us and showing his love for us. And there's a lot of this shrubbery that people put up, these intellectual obstacles that's supposedly up there to keep people from even getting to that point. So my goal in life is to try to remove as many of those as possible so that people can get to the heart of it, which is what Christ did for us. And you're going to have to make a choice on that issue, on whether you accept that or reject it. Because at the end of the day, any Christian who truly believes in God and believes in the Bible, you know that when we die, there's a judgment day, and that you're going to end up going to one of two places, right? And while I know, Aaron, you may not share that worldview, and I understand, but any true Christian, if I'm